miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps cry on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Alright, Revolution Radio, it's Saturday, and it's time for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show with your host, Scorpio. Lost a little honey on the lone highway. Let me pour another.
Hello, and welcome to Operation Scorpio. And welcome to the Lone Highway, guys. Today's date is Saturday, August 29th, 2020. About to jump into September. Wow. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Yes, riots on the streets of America. But is it organic? Or are we just watching a movie? Yes, we are watching a movie, guys. And it's a movie that's being played out on the streets of America to divide us and sow hatred where none need exist. And, you know, many of the people participating in these street riots don't even know that they are but actors on a stage. I guess we all are, aren't we? We are all but actors on a stage, some more than others. And, you know, we don't even know if this 17-year-old kid in Kenosha, if he really shot those people, or if they were taken out by possible snipers who were covertly put into place to make sure that people were killed. And I'm not saying I believe that to be a fact, but it is a possibility. And it's possible because these events that we're seeing broadcast on the mainstream media and, you know, the same media that's telling us that all of these events are absolutely real and organic, they are actually being lifted from a script. And it's a script that was written long ago, only to be re-resurrected once again onto the world stage. And it's, you know, it's kind of like these so-called color revolutions that we've seen all over the world since the 1950s, actually long before that, but let's just say that's the modern origin of them. They're coming home to roost now on the streets of America. And, you know, it's people need to see, you know, on both sides of the aisle, the manipulations that are being hoisted upon us. You know, this movie is just a rerun of a movie that's been played many times before. Only this time, it's up to us to write a new ending. And, you know, this hatred, it's being sowed on both sides of the aisle. You know, people on the so-called right are being trained to hate the lefty commies. But, you know, we need to see that this is manipulation on both sides. And, you know, hating each other is not the answer. That's exactly the trap they're trying to set for us all. And I say this is a rerun of a movie because I'm going to go into, along with my co-host Giuseppe, we're going to go into this script and the fact that it was actually revealed, this script was revealed in a documentary that was made in 1965 by G. Edward Griffin. And we're going to play some clips of that and discuss it because it's really incredible just exactly how similar the playbook is from what it was back in the 1960s. Giuseppe, how are you doing, man? What's up?
Hey, brother, I'm good. You know, that's really interesting that you brought up the potential of snipers because I was reading the report from the coroner on one of the attackers of Kyle Rittenhouse, Jojo Rosenbaum, a fine member of the tribe, and he had multiple shot wounds in his back. So he never turned his back on Kyle Rittenhouse.
Wow. Well, and it's some awfully good shooting for a 17-year-old kid that was being knocked over and panicking, essentially. You just have to wonder, I'd like to know more about this kid's background and, like, you know, what did his parents do for a living? What kind of family is he from? I'm just curious to know his family connections because, again, we can't trust a word we're being told. And this really is a movie script. And, you know, this documentary that we're going to kind of go into today was made in 1965 by G. Edward Griffith, Anarchy USA, In the Name of Civil Rights, I believe is the full title of it. And, you know, I was thinking about the snipers too, because I was watching or listening to the clips again yesterday. And one of the things they talk about is that there was snipers put on the streets back in the 60s to stir up more trouble and to make the to kind of keep the police at bay, so they could they just had to let it happen. Of course, now the mayors and governors are just telling the police to flat on stand down and just let it happen, baby.
Right, just lie back and enjoy it. The interesting
yeah,
thing,
just relax and let it happen.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this young man, Kyle Rittenhouse, I've watched that video of him from multiple angles and slowed down, and I've researched some of his past, and he's the real deal. He is military trained, man. It's crazy. He clearly is you know, absorbing these attacks. His rifle locks up while he's dodging this craziness and throwing a person off him. He unlocks his rifle and blows that fella's right bicep off, who had a gun and was a weasel who was acting like he was going to surrender, and then he was going to pull the gun up and kill Rittenhouse. It is compelling. Wow. Video. Yeah, he's the real
yeah.
deal.
Well, that's interesting, Giuseppe. And another thing that, you know, I was talking about these seeds of hatred that are being sown. You know, I was watching some enemy war footage, also known as Democracy Now with Amy Goodman. And she reported the shooting that Rittenhouse had just had stumbled and fell over, and that the peaceful protesters were trying to take the evil kid's weapon from him. They were trying to disarm him because, you know, they don't like violence. But of course, if you watch the whole video, the guy got hit over the head with a skateboard pretty harshly. And so again, we're, you know, one side's being told, oh, this kid just shot people for no reason. And then the other side is being told, oh, look, he got hit over the head with a skateboard. So isn't it a good thing that he shot that guy? So I just see how we're both, you know, so-called sides are being manipulated in this event through the media.
As we discussed last night on The Perfect Triangle with the great Sarah Westall, who's a true muckraking independent journalist, we are constantly lied to. The globalist media is the globalist mind control industrial complex, and they are raping our minds, or attempting to, and succeeding with the great herds of sheeple with movies, with TV shows, with especially the news and the disinformation on the internet. And it's so criminal, it's so satanically evil, that if you don't wake up, you being you and me and the listeners, hopefully there's more than one, and just take charge of our own lives and somehow resist, all is lost.
Yeah, and I like that term, the propaganda industrial complex. That's good. That's good. And it's very accurate. And Yeah, I think the media is really overstepping their bounds, and their lies and deliberate disinformation is reaching a point where more and more people are starting to, let's say, get it. So we're at a sweet spot here for people to start to see the truth. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's happening. I mean, as Dennis Fecho observed last hour, which he's such a great host and champion of truth. We'll have to maybe have him on the show someday, get him to stay on an extra hour or two. The people are waking up. The mask scam, the scamdemic. I mean, what you have, of course, and a great lead-in to next Friday's guest, Dr. Judy Mikovits, is coming back to the Perfect Triangle, and it's really important with all this craziness with these RNA vaccines and the mask bullshit. The idea that people are waking up. I mean, I'm really proud of the Germans. You know, millions are marching. The Irish are jumping in. People in the various parts of the United States are showing up to stop the, you know, Antifa and BLM, burn, loot, and murder. They're a combination of professional trained anarchists and idiotic amateurs, right? So there's always a few people there. And I, man, when you brought that up about G. Edgar, that was a great putting the pieces together, because I read that coroner report and I'm like, what the hell? You know, there's multiple shots, not just one, but multiple on this guy. And right. So who did it? I mean, there's only two ways, either a sniper or a bunch of crazed Antifa's pulled out their weapons and started firing. But I watched the video. I saw no evidence of that. So I just saw these repeated individual attacks coming at him. So,
yeah, absolutely. And again, it's just all manipulation, and it's like a movie we're being shown, and we're supposed to believe it's all real when it's not. It's all scripted. And I guess that's the point of jumping into these clips now from this Anarchy USA from 1965 by G. Edward Griffith. You know, I didn't even realize that he had been in this fight for so long. And it's kind of like, you know, a fine bottle of wine. This documentary has aged very well. And I like the kind of retro style, you know, of the announcer, you know, the old style announcers and, you know, talking about the communist. It's very interesting, but it's all very pertinent. And of course, we also need to throw in there that this is all being run by intelligence agencies. Absolutely. What were your opening ideas on this documentary?
I too love everything retro, because it harkens back to a better time in this country, and it just puts you like in a interesting little timeless limbo that, oh wow, that's how it was. And you know, I was a little boy then. You know, I didn't clearly see this documentary, but I witnessed the riots in the 60s from my front porch in Milwaukee in the Italian district. I mean, we heard the gunshots from across the river and all. It was crazy. And so I think I think G. Edward Griffith is really, really an amazing guy. I mean, now he's a curmudgeon and he's still going strong. So maybe we can get him on the show. But the clip, it's old. So you're going to hear a little crackle from analog. But here we go.
Okay, great. Here's clip number one.
Perhaps the people in other countries had just reasons to riot against their governments. After all, many of the nations of the world are dictatorships in one form or another. What business was it of ours, anyway? Newsworthy, perhaps, but it could never happen here. Then, in the summer of 1964, widespread rioting and looting suddenly broke out in Harlem, in Rochester, in Newark, in Jersey City, in Philadelphia, Cleveland, and Chicago, all within a few days of each other. It was as though an unseen hand had given the signal. Then, on August 18th, 1965, guns replaced nightsticks in the hands of law enforcement officers as the Watts area of Los Angeles literally burst into a cauldron of insurrection. Thousands of rioters roamed the streets both night and day, smashing and looting, and setting the torch to over 50 square miles of the city. Hidden snipers held police and firefighters at bay as fires raged unabated. At least 35 Americans died in the violence and gunfire. The sheer magnitude of this monstrous madness strained the abilities of the civil authorities, and the California National Guard was sent to Watts with orders to quell the violence with brute force if necessary. The spectacle of American soldiers shooting it out with American civilians was even more shocking than the rioting itself. The nation was stunned and horrified. No smugness now. This time, it wasn't a foreign country. This time, it was Anarchy USA.
Yes, this time it was Anarchy USA. That's I love the retro style of the announcer. But, you know, Giuseppe, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind from hearing this clip is they say by the summer of 64, there were riots. So that's like, what, 6 months after John F. Kennedy was assassinated on the streets of America. It's really amazing. And they talk about this unseen hand. Well, yeah. An unseen unleashed these riots within 6 months of Kennedy being killed. Isn't that a strange bit of timing?
Yeah, the unseen hand. I mean, it's classic operant trauma conditioning. You know, you had the great satanic Zionist sacrifice of Kennedy in public. You know, they're all about 6,000 years Babylonian Talmudic death cult, and they require blood sacrifice in their rituals, and he was that. And that was such a trauma to the psyche of really naive Americans at that point. Everybody was riding high after World War II. I mean, the country was fat and happy and had a powerhouse of manufacturing, and even a high school person could make a living wage. I mean, a high school graduate could make a living wage, have a own home, have a couple cars, and life was great. The one time in the history of the United States, just about every class was well taken care of. And so, but the globalist banksters, who were way more in the shadows then, because they were more or less pulling the strings of the Eastern blue blood bankers. You had no idea, other than people like Eustace Mullins, had no idea who the real puppet masters were then. We all thought it was, I was a little boy. I didn't think about such things then, but people just thought, the government is in control, and the bankers, you know, blah, blah, we can trust them. They give us loans, and, you know, everybody was buying the whole idea of U.S. capitalism and all this stuff. And it's funny that even then they were beginning these trauma conditionings and mind control and, wow, they play the long con, and they are very good at it.
Yeah, and of course, back then, you know, people really did trust everything the media told them and pretty much everything the government told them, but we're not at that point anymore in time, are we? No. So, and the last thing I wanted to say is just that it did mention that there was hidden snipers that were taking pot shots at the police and at people just to keep things moving along. And you have to wonder, you know, obviously they're capable of doing that again today. Why don't we jump into the second clip? Because I want to make sure we get all this on before we bring our guest on next hour.
Here we go.
The degree of communist influence in these riots has been subject of much discussion and controversy. For a solution to this controversy, let's review the events of recent years, both at home and abroad, in light of the communists' own plans for world conquest.
The communists disdain to conceal their views and aims. They openly declare that their ends can only be attained by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions.
The most powerful enemy can be conquered only by exerting the utmost effort and by thoroughly, carefully, attentively and skillfully taking advantage of even the smallest rift, of every antagonism of interest among the various groups or types within the various countries.
Divide the people. Split them into quarreling factions, fighting among themselves rather than their common enemy. This is the comrades' first rule for the conquest of any country. For well do they know from long experience that the nation so divided and weakened can be easily conquered from within.
Wow, it's deja vu all over again. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's funny that it goes even back further if you think about the deja vu, that 100 years ago, the globalist banksters funded the Bolshevik Revolution, and now they're funding the Bolshevik 2.0, which is this Antifa anarchy and attack on the sovereign United States. So, you know, you set off air about your uncle and how they know how easily they can manipulate the masses. And it's like they have a couple of tried and true plays, like Vince Lombardi of the Green Bay Packers in the 60s used to run his vaunted power sweep. And he was just like, again and again, until you can stop me. And that was his philosophy. And that's what these globalists do. You know, until you wake up and stop us, we're just going to do the same thing over because it works.
Yeah, we're being rope-a-doped, aren't we, in a sense? Yeah. And what's interesting, too, is that, of course, now we know for a fact that many of these so-called, rioters and you know, Black Lives Matter, they're actually being funded by Wall Street and big corporations. And it's another repeat, because that's exactly what happened. The Bolsheviks were all funded by Wall Street and big corporations as well. So, again, this is the same playbook at work.
Well, it's especially insidious because Trump, you know, he's on the razor's edge. He has to placate the New York bankers who pretty much control him. But he's also, you know, an American, and he's a loyalist, and he believes in America. And so he puts a goyim to run the Federal Reserve. And what do? They create this BlackRock, which is like the Federal Reserve on steroids, and have the Federal Reserve now is pretty much the puppet of BlackRock. And Larry Fink, the Zionist president of BlackRock. And not only that, but most people don't realize that in the scamdemic early months, they knew it was coming, they being the globalists. And they short sold the Wall Street massive decline to the tune of $100 trillion in short selling profits. That's $100 trillion they stole from the investors of the United States. Well, the world, everybody can invest, but the average people, right? I mean, it's so criminal and nobody talks about it.
It is absolutely criminal. And we need to start seeing these activities as criminal. Just like central banking as it's now practiced is an act of criminality. There's no question about it. And Grog in the chat room kind of asked an interesting question. Can you reform a commie? Well, that's a good question. And, you know, it depends, because this communism is really a mind virus. It's a bad idea. A false idea planted in people's minds, thinking that if we just give the government absolute power over everything, they'll give us free stuff and life will be better. You know, and unfortunately, that's not how it usually plays out in history.
Yeah, it's sad. And here, my wife brought up a really fascinating point, which is it goes along the same lines, which is, you know, if you look at like the amount in dollars of criminal theft on a histogram, right? It's like, let's say it raises to the first or second level, right? But if you then chart the amount of theft on unpaid wages from corporations and businesses who screw the workers, it's 20 times higher. That is white collar theft, and always they get away with it.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be somehow less harmful. So we're not going to throw those people in jail. Or if we do, we just put them in a club fed and let them mow golf courses, to serve their sentence. Okay, well, let's go on to the next clip.
With phase one, that of dividing the population, completed, the revolutionists were ready to move into phase two of the communist blueprint for takeover. Create the appearance of popular support. In every country now part of the Red Slave Empire, the actual number of Communist Party members at the time of takeover has been less than 1% of the total population. As Lenin phrased it,
communism must be built with non-communist hands.
By cleverly beguiling thousands of well-intentioned people into unwittingly supporting the revolutionary program, the dedicated 1% can trick the 99% into surrendering their birthright. This they do by hiding the true communist objectives behind appealing slogans and pretended humanitarian goals. As Stalin explained,
the revolutionary accepts reform in order to use it as a cover for his illegal work.
In China, the propaganda mills were active in championing Mao's agrarian reform. The propagandist portrayed in vivid detail the hardships and injustices of the Chinese peasant. The communists popularized the slogan, "Land to the Tiller." Mao Zedong exclaimed, "We are not striving for the social and political communism of Russia. Rather, we prefer to think of what we are doing as something Lincoln fought for in the Civil War, the liberation of slaves." In the United States, those books which praised Mao Zedong as non-communist and an agrarian reformer were advocated reading, and some even became book club selections. It was later revealed that many of the pro-communist books and articles were written and reviewed in this country by communists. The American people, unaware of the treachery, were conditioned to accept the enslavement of China's millions. Cubans rallied round the slogan, "Patria o Muerte." But perhaps the most widely used slogan was the one later to be used in Haiti and Venezuela, and still later in English in the United States. Venceremos. We shall overcome. Early in the revolution, Fidel Castro sought to reassure the people of the true nature of the uprising. "I have said very clearly that we are not communists. Our revolution is a humanistic one." The press of the world sang praises of Fidel Castro. Many eulogized him as the savior of Cuba. In the United States, Castro was referred to as the Robin Hood of the Sierra Maestra, that he pursued the same policy of taking from the rich and giving to the poor. The nation's press was quick to report, "This is not a communist revolution in any sense of the word, and there are no communists in position of control. The only power worth considering in Cuba is in the hands of Premier Castro, who is not only not communist, but decidedly anti-communist." And so the Cubans and the Americans and the rest of the world were reassured that there was no infidel in Fidel.
Yes, no infidel in Fidel. I like that. That's funny. And of course, this is another thing. No, we're not communists. No, they don't admit that until after they get the power.
Yeah, the venceremos, mijo. The best thing I like about that clip is how Lennon sounds like Gabby Hayes, the old supporting actor in a John Wayne Western. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Oh, okay, let's go on to the next clip. This is a real, particularly good one. You're going to like this one, Giuseppe.
After the communists have found some issue or point of difference upon which they can divide the people, get them fighting among themselves rather than their common enemy, the next step is to create the appearance of popular support for the communists' war of national liberation. They have been devastatingly successful thus far. Yet in one country after another, there have been alert, informed individuals who saw the signs, recognized the patterns of conquest, and raised their voices to warn the people. Against just such a contingency, the communists developed the third phase of their blueprint for world domination, neutralize the opposition.
We can and must write in a language which sows among the masses hate, revulsion, and scorn toward those who disagree with us.
A Communist Party directive issued in 1943 reads,
members and front organizations must continually embarrass, discredit, and degrade our critics. When obstructionists become too irritating, label them as fascist or Nazi or anti-Semitic. Constantly associate those who oppose us with those names which already have a bad smell. The association will, after enough repetition, become fact in the public mind.
Okay, so, Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on that little ditty?
I think that the classic weaponized minority of the Zionist, their age-old trick, as delineated by the incredibly unbiased journalist Amy Goodman on Democracy Now!, was interviewing a former Israeli cabinet minister saying, I got to pull that clip so I can play it when I talk about it because it's worth coming up again and again. She goes, every time we are threatened, we just, in Europe, we call them a Nazi, and in America, we call them a anti-Semite. It works every time. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's just, what is wrong with people to fall for that garbage? It's insane.
Well, and it's like crying wolf. You know, they've done it so many times, it's starting to lose its effectiveness, kind of like calling people racist. But what's interesting is that, you know, this is from a 1943 document that they were reading from. So this anti-Semitism game has been cooked up since before World War II even ended. It's really incredible.
Right. Yeah, it is incredible. And I mean, if you think about, you go back to Moses Hess and Theodor Herzl and their machinations beginning at the end of the 19th century. I mean, we keep saying it, and it's true. There is an otherworldly entity beyond time of absolute evil that is guiding these minions, these satanic minions. There's no doubt about it. There's no way humans can put together this kind of long con. It just doesn't work. It's coming from somewhere else.
That's right. And this is an informative comment from Snippets in the chat room. Reform a commie? I doubt it. The Talmud doesn't work that way. Uh-oh. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's go on to the next clip then.
The next step in the communist strategy is the most easily recognized, for it consists of the tactic of getting masses into motion, and thus precipitating mob violence. Master psychologists that they are, the communists know that once the masses are in the streets, it's not too difficult to convert an orderly demonstration into a full-scale riot. They know, too, that when rioting occurs, police and military forces of the government must move to restore law and order, and thus they have the first visible signs of revolution.
Riots, demonstrations, street battles, detachments of a revolutionary army. Such are the stages in the development of the popular uprising.
The official constitution and program of the Communist Party stated in 1921,
the Communist Party will educate and organize the working masses for mass strikes and mass demonstrations. It is through struggles that the working masses are prepared for the final conflict for power. As these strikes grow in number and intensity, they acquire political character through unavoidable collision and open combat with the capitalistic state. Mass action culminates in insurrection and civil war.
In 1964, a communist document taken from the Viet Cong stated,
get the people out into the streets. Quarrels should be provoked. Youth groups are to be armed with knives and clubs, allegedly to protect themselves and the manufactured tension.
In China, as in all countries, the communist appeal was aimed primarily at students, young, idealistic intellectuals, most of whom came from wealthy families who could afford to send them to school. It was from this group that the young communist recruits came who later provided the leadership and backbone for the armed conflict to follow. In Cuba, leftist-oriented students were the vanguard of the organized street demonstrations. Once the masses were in motion, that tenuous line between demonstration and riot, between nonviolence and violence, was easily obliterated. As law enforcement officers sought to restore order, police brutality became the cry of the insurgents. Algeria was more of the same: rallies, demonstrations, marches, and the inevitable flare of violence. The invariable charges of police brutality were hurled as efforts were made to maintain law and order. When marches and demonstrations turn into riots in any country slated for takeover, the communists are then ready to implement the final stage of their blueprint for conquest. It takes only a handful of armed opportunists, criminals, and savages to create the semblance of revolution.
Only insurrection can guarantee the victory of the revolution. The purpose of insurrection must be not only the complete destruction or removal of all local authorities and the replacement by new, but also the expulsion of the landlords and the seizure of their lands.
Yeah, we've got to defund the police and replace them, don't we? And, you know, and this is just a repeat, man. It's amazing. And, you know, they were talking about the arms from Chiang Kai-shek being actually shipped to the Vietnam, Viet Cong during the Vietnam War. That Fletcher Prouty revealed this in his book, The Secret Team, that, you know, they actually took the arms that were seized from Chiang Kai-shek and sent them to the North Koreans to get the Vietnam War ready to roll. So these wars are planned and these conflicts are planned. And isn't it amazing how the U.S. actually pressured Chiang Kai-shek to form a coalition government with the Chi Coms? This would be a subject for a whole nother show, which is the secret support for communist revolutions and regimes all over the world since the very beginning of the concept. The deep state is doing it again today.
Right. It's all a play. We're all in the audience thinking it's real, but it's a play. Or we're all in the audience watching a movie and thinking the movie's real. And, well, actually, let me take that back. It's professional wrestling. It's rigged, but it seems real. And the people who dig professional wrestling, even if you tell them, well, this is all fake, you know, this is all worked out in advance. No, man, I love the Hulkster. I love the Macho Man. You know, it's like, that's what's going on. This is a world of professional wrestling.
That's a really good analogy, because there are guys on stage beating each other up. But the question is, who are they working for and who wrote the script? Very good analogy. I like that. Okay, let's go on to the next clip, because this time is just flying by.
Chiang Kai-shek's nationalist forces had long been fighting the communist-inspired insurrectionists of Mao Zedong when the Japanese invaded the mainland of China. With the end of World War II and the defeat of the Japanese, the United States pressured Chiang into forming a coalition government with the communists. Through a coerced truce and enforced arms embargo, the U.S. disarmed more than 30 divisions of Chiang Kai-shek's nationalist troops. On the other hand, the Chinese communists fell heir to all the arms left by the defeated Japanese. And with the help of added armaments from Russia, Mao was soon able to ride in triumph throughout China and give 400 million Chinese agrarian reform, communist style. When it was time for the shooting to begin in Cuba, Fidel Castro received millions of dollars in cash and vast amounts of arms and ammunition from the Soviet Union and communist groups throughout the Western Hemisphere. At the crucial time in Castro's bid for power, the United States State Department declared an arms embargo against Batista's government, refusing to deliver even the arms that had already been paid for and were awaiting shipment. Yet, on the other hand, revolutionary sympathizers were delivering men, arms, and ammunition to Castro daily from the United States. And so the Abraham Lincoln of Cuba and the Robin Hood of the Sierra Maestra rode triumphantly into Havana, was wined and dined in the United States, was hugged before the United Nations, received the Lenin Peace Prize, and finally admitted in a speech given December 2nd, 1961, to all the world. I am a Marxist-Leninist and will be until the day I die. In Algeria,
well, there you go.
We're fighting their war of liberation with guns and ammunition sent to them through Tunisia and Morocco by the communist bloc countries.
Okay, what are your thoughts on that little clip there, Giuseppe?
It's funny because when I was 19 years old, I took off a half year of college and freshman year and worked to save up money to go with my Sicilian childhood buddy Onofrio. He wanted to go visit his grandparents, and I wanted to trace my roots and see my relatives in Sicily. So we did, and I got to meet for the first time my cousin Pino, and he was about 10 years older than me and totally cool guy. And they he was a communist, and he had all kinds of posters. In fact, he gave me some posters to bring back, and I thought it was the coolest wow. thing, because I, as a young man like Pino, who believed that it was the people, the workers unite, and that's how they do it. They convince the average decent person who would like to see more power and more opportunity for the masses, the working masses, but it's always such a sham. And as we well know, any government that is taken over by the communists becomes such a vicious, totalitarian, brutal regime and murders millions of people. I mean, the one that's the most tolerable is Cuba. I mean, they probably only murdered, you know, a couple hundred thousand, but it's just, it always is the same script. They lie, they get in power, they wipe everybody out who's not with the program.
Well, and then they create our future enemies. It was interesting how they pointed out that arms and aid was sent to Castro from the United States.
Right.
So the CIA and other intelligence organizations built Castro up, as they have countless others, and then spent the next 50 years trying to destroy him and go to war. So I'm seeing a pattern emerge here, Giuseppe.
No doubt.
So, okay, well, let's go on to the next clip.
And so it has been, with but minor variations in one country after another. Divide the people. Create the appearance of popular support. Neutralize the opposition. Precipitate mob violence. Create the semblance of a revolution. An accurate summary of Lenin's strategy for the conquest of the world is as follows.
First, we will take Eastern Europe. Next, the masses of Asia. Then we shall encircle the last bastion of capitalism, the United States of America. We will not have to attack. It will fall like overripe fruit into our hands.
By October of 1950, all of Eastern Europe was securely locked behind the Iron Curtain. By the summer of 1954, the greater part of Asia had fallen to the Kremlin's strategy and tactics. And each year, more nations lose their sovereignty to Marxist intrigues or degenerate into Soviet satellites as communism hastens to complete the encirclement of the last bastion of capitalism. And what of the United States? How goes the battle in the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Okay, Giuseppe, I'm getting confused here because, he said that by 1950, all of Eastern Europe had fallen to communism. That's only 2 years after the end of World War II, this wonderful war we fought to stop the evil Nazis from taking over all of Europe. But somehow 2 years later, the communists had grabbed all of Eastern Europe. What do you think about that? I'm getting confused. Can you help?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you read David Irving's awesome historical accounts of World War II, Irving states that the reason Hitler could invade Russia and penetrate so swiftly is because all of the armaments were positioned to invade. They weren't positioned to attack. And so Stalin was planning that. And it's funny how instead of supporting the country, the real heroes of World War II, the good people of Germany, we went with the murderous Stalin, and we know the results of that.
Well, yeah, and it's also interesting, you know, the big trigger for World War II was that Germany invaded Poland. But, of course, at the same time, Russia invaded Poland from the other side. And, of course, that wasn't a big deal, but Germany did it, so it was time to go to war and send, 80 million people to the slaughter for a war that really didn't really accomplish a whole lot because, again, it just set the stage for the Cold War, just like World War I set the stage for World War II. I'm seeing a pattern here, you know.
It's really incredible. The Rothschilds and the elite satanic globalist parasites, they like war, and it seems like they've been pushing for years now for a war with Iran, which will pull in China, who they really want to go to war with. So it's insane. It's satanically evil.
And of course, you know, we built the Chinese up under the Clinton regime. You know, it's easy to forget that in the 1970s, China was an agrarian society and it was fairly backwards there. By the 1990s, the Clintons were selling and giving away every military and intelligence secret and industrial secret that they possibly could. Anything that wasn't nailed to the floor was being given to the Chinese. It was really incredible. And that continues today. But they are our enemy now, and we have to maybe fight them soon.
Well, okay, I didn't have sex with that country.
What's that?
Well, I didn't have sex with that country.
Oh, yeah. No, I feel your pain. Okay, let's go on to the next clip here.
These cities and the cities which lie within their spheres of influence became known in communist writings as the Black Belt of the South and were to constitute the nucleus of a future Soviet republic. At the National Convention of the American Communist Party, held in New York City in June of 1940, James Ford, the Communist Party candidate for the Vice Presidency of the United States, said,
"For the Negro in the South, my people, the Negro people of America, have in the Communist Party their best defender, the unfailing champion of their cause. I accept this nomination for Vice President of the United States."
By this time, the communist champions of the Negro race had hidden the revolutionary ideas and slogans for a Soviet Negro Republic behind humanitarian banners of jobs, security, civil rights, and peace. These humanistic issues were to provide the friction necessary to divide the American people and lay the groundwork for revolution.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on that one, Giuseppe?
I think that G. Edward Griffith has one thing wrong. Is it's not a Negro-Soviet alliance. The communist, which is in reality the internationalist Jew, as Henry Ford describes it, they use the blacks like a dog trainer uses a pit bull.
Yeah, there's like a battering ram. Yeah.
There's no alliance.
Yeah. This is all through the filter of the communists back in those days. But now we're seeing that the stage is a little more complex. And they sent this Joseph Holgani guy, aka Joe Pepper, a Hungarian Jew, to come to the United States and agitate. And he even wrote this book called I think, Negro Problems in America, where the whole strategy was to stir up problems with the black people of America to foment their revolution, to use them as unknowing pawns in a game that, you know, they didn't fully understand.
Well, as our guest last night, Sarah Westall, observed, and she released part one of her interview, there's a fellow named Dwight Mitchell, who's a self-made man, a black man, and he tells her in the interview, or she recounted, I have not watched it yet, that he remembers back in the 50s and 60s when he was a young boy that, you know, he had a two-parent family and they made him work hard in school. And he said life was better in the 60s, you know, and they've intentionally destroyed the family unit, especially for African-Americans. And it's criminal, and it's like the Joker in Batman. It's all part of the plan. It's all part of the plan to destabilize and keep the divide and conquer tribes at each other's throats.
Yeah, and then you throw in gangster rap and some crack and welfare checks for single mothers to encourage people, women to have children out of wedlock, and you've got a great formula to really mess up a society and a whole faction of people, frankly. So, yeah.
It's amazing.
Okay,
now.
Well, we got one last clip here before we bring on our guest in the top of the hour. So let's play that and see where it takes us.
The communist plan for the conquest of the United States was explained to the American comrades by Moscow's agent, Joseph Pogani. Pogani was sent to this country by Stalin for the specific purpose of laying the groundwork for the agitation that would eventually develop into a Negro revolutionary movement. American Negro Problems was published in 1928 by Joseph Pogani using the alias John Pepper and carried the official communist line for America.
The Workers' Communist Party of America, in its fight against imperialism, must recognize clearly the tremendous revolutionary possibilities of the liberation movement of the Negro people. The Black Belt of the South, with its starving and pauperized Negro farmers and Negro agricultural working masses, with its Jim Crowism, its semi-feudal status, and its political system still bearing the earmarks of the period of slavery, constitutes virtually a colony within the body of the United States of America. The Workers' Communist Party of America puts forward correctly as its central slogan, abolition of the whole system of race discrimination, full racial, social, and political equality for the Negro people. But it is necessary to supplement the struggle for the full racial, social, and political equality of the Negroes with a struggle for their right of national self-determination. Self-determination means the right to establish their own state, to erect their own government if they choose to do so. The Negro communists should emphasize in their propaganda the establishment of a Negro Soviet Republic.
In 1934, the communist writers James W. Ford and James S. Allen further defined the Soviet Negro Republic.
The actual extent of this new republic would in all probability be approximately the present area in which the Negroes constitute the majority of the population. In other words, it would be approximately the present plantation area. It would be certain to include such cities as Richmond and Norfolk, Virginia, Columbia and Charleston, South Carolina, Atlanta, Augusta, Savannah, and Macon, Georgia, Montgomery, Alabama, New Orleans and Shreveport, Louisiana, Little Rock, Arkansas, and Memphis, Tennessee.
Well, again, here we have this Hungarian Jew, Joseph Pogani. And, of course, well, today we have George Soros, who's a front man for a lot of this. But what's interesting is this Pogani guy wrote and was thinking of this strategy back in 1928. Amazing.
Yes, despicable, no doubt. And, boy, bringing up Jorgi Schwartz, the real name of George Soros, the admirable Hungarian Jew who literally sold out his fellow Jews to the Nazis for some shekels. And well, I guess it's rhetorical. How does a scumbag, impoverished Hungarian lad get to be a billionaire and wield untold influence on this world. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And then, of course, you know, this strategy was cooked up a long time ago, and they're still working from the same playbook. That's the part that I find so amazing. And it's time for the general public to quit falling for the same old tricks.
Right. It's like the Lombardi power sweep. Keep it running the play until you stop it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And and of course, you know, they're even talking about we have to have racial equality, and now we have a systemic racism, you know. So this is the same cries that we've been hearing since this strategy was cooked up. And I don't even know what is going to be – what does racial equality mean? I don't see how you can make everyone equal. Everyone's good at different stuff, and there's no way you can accomplish that. It's not possible. Unless everyone's a slave, of course. That's a possibility. Okay, we're at the top of the hour, so we're going to bring on our guest, John Friend, next hour. So everyone, stay tuned. Okay, everyone, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. Giuseppe and myself have been playing clips from this documentary made in 1965 entitled Anarchy USA, made by G. Edward Griffith back in the old days. And anyway, I think that was an interesting conversation about what is happening and how this is a giant replay from the same old playbook. And with that, I'd like to bring on our guest for this next 2 hours, John Friend. John is someone that's been involved in this struggle for quite some time. And he's a writer for the American Free Press. He has his own podcast, and he's really been involved in this struggle for quite a long time on many levels. So that said, John, thank you for coming on the show. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I'm doing good. It's a nice sunny day here in Southern California. Got up and did a nice little workout, so got the day started right. And, I'm looking forward to the chat.
Oh, good. Yeah, I got to stay healthy, man. This whole COVID hoax is really part of a plan to try to make people unhealthy by staying at home, doing nothing, wearing masks and gloves around town, and just being walking around in fear of the invisible enemy.
Oh, I know, man. And you know what? I struggled with it for a couple months because the gym that I had been going to for probably 6 or 7 years. I mean, everybody closed down, so I wasn't really working out a lot. I started working out like outside. I'd go to the park and try to do a workout, but it's really just kind of not the same. And then, the past couple months, though, I've kind of gotten back into it. I purchased a couple Groupons and just tried a couple different gyms in the local area. And it's been good. It's been good getting back into the swing of things. And I'll tell you what, man, at least for me, I feel a lot better. I have a lot more energy. I can, you know, think clearer. You know, I don't know. I just feel better all around when I'm active and actually able to get a good workout in. Maybe not every day, but, you know, 4 or 5 times a week at least.
Yeah, and that's the exact opposite of what we're being told we should do. And, you know, it's pretty obvious these people do not have our best intentions in mind. You know, on the previous hour, Giuseppe and myself were playing some clips from this documentary made in 1965, Anarchy USA, talking about, you know, the communist techniques to sort of overturn society. And I was playing it because they're working from the same playbook today. And I wanted just to play two last clips so you could hear them and get your commentary, because I think you're going to relate with some of these very well. So, Giuseppe, if you could go ahead and play the next clip, please.
By concealing the true communist objectives behind appealing slogans and pretended humanitarian goals, the conspirators are able to dupe hundreds of uninformed opportunists and misguided idealists into supplying the non-communist hands needed in the overthrow of this republic. Thoroughly deceived, some of the Negroes cry for liberation through the slogan, Freedom Now. The Democratic slogan, One Man, One Vote, has gained wide acceptance. But perhaps the most popular slogan is Venceremos, the rallying cry of the deluded peasants of Cuba, Haiti, and Venezuela. Venceremos, we shall overcome, is now the rallying cry of the deluded peoples of the United States.
So, John, are you getting a deja vu all over again, or what are your thoughts on what you're hearing there?
Yeah, man, it's so true. I mean, the left is always – they've always framed things like in these very moralistic terms when it's just like the total opposite of reality. Like the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, think about that. It's such an obvious scam. I mean, if black lives truly did matter, then we'd be more concerned about the violence, the black-on-black violence that is widespread and rampant in virtually every single major city. I mean, you know, it's like every weekend rolls around, you go on Twitter and you see headlines, you know, 20 shootings in Chicago, 10 murders. I mean, it's just outrageous. And yet this isn't even talked about. It's barely even reported upon. I mean, unless you go to like the local news and they don't even frame it in their correct way. So, yeah, I mean, and it's got a lot of people deceived. It's again, you know, the documentary is right. I'm familiar with this. I don't think I've seen the whole thing, but I'm aware of what's the name of it you said? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Anarchy USA in the name Anarchy of USA. Civil rights.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, it's typical. This is what they've been doing going all the way back to the 1950s and 60s. And it's just a modern day extension of that. And, you know, it's still, people are still being duped by it. It's incredible.
It is. It's like a B grade movie being replayed over and over and over for us. Okay. If we could play this one more clip, and then I want Giuseppe to jump in and see where this all takes us.
Members and front organizations must continually embarrass, discredit, and degrade our critics. When obstructionists become too irritating, label them as fascist or Nazi or anti-Semitic. Constantly associate those who oppose us with those names which already have a bad smell. The association will, after enough repetition, become facts in the public mind.
Okay, so yeah, you know, call the opponents anti-Semitic and fascist, racist and Nazi. Ever happened to you, John?
Yeah, once or twice it's happened. Yeah, no, that's a major theme of a lot of what I've written over the years and talked about in my podcast is the weaponization of language, the weaponization of our political discourse and how words are used to demonize and discredit and render you like essentially unperson you. You know, if you're called a Nazi or a racist and you're white, I mean, you are basically like totally delegitimized and discredited. And, you know, it's an effective tactic. It's been effective over the years. But really it just takes a little bit of critical thinking to see through it. And, sadly that's sort of lacking in society, at least on a broad level. But, yeah, I mean, these sorts of words, I mean, it's, yeah, I've tried to go through and kind of define like exactly like the way anti-Semitism is used and understood by the organized Jewish community, for example. And I mean, you know, there's polls that they conduct, like these international surveys on anti-Semitic attitudes around the world and whatnot. And like, I mean, it's basically like anybody that recognizes the reality of Jewish power and influence, anybody that is like critical of Jews or the state of Israel or, you know, for example, in the United States, the billions of dollars that we give to Israel every year, you know, if you're critical of that, you're an anti-Semite, right? I mean, that's basically the way they use that definition. So it's, you know, again, it's a weaponized buzzword that has been effectively used to discredit people and to unperson them. And, you know, it's going to take people to finally see through this and stand up to it. If it's ever going to change, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on this?
I think that John is absolutely right. John, I'm a huge fan of the Realist Report and your articles on the American Free Press, and it's great to be able to discuss with you. I think it's even more insidious now, John. I'd like to get your thoughts on this statement, which is before they would just label you an anti-Semite, but, you know, that was that. You could shrug it off. Now – These rodents dox you. They censor you. They destroy your access to credit and digital currency. So they can put massive wounds on anyone who tells the truth, and it's just criminal. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, man. I completely agree. And this has been going on for a long time. Now it's on a whole new level, though. I mean, back in like 2014, I first got kicked off of PayPal, and so did some other people at the time. But now, I mean, it's so much more widespread, and the censorship is you know, basically at a level that it wasn't at, you know, 5-6 years ago, that's for sure. There was I saw a tweet by Roosh actually maybe a week ago or so, where after, you know, basically everybody that was on the ADL's list that they wanted to get banned off of YouTube has now been banned off of YouTube. And still the Jews present themselves as like this powerless, you know, benevolent minority, you know what I mean? Meanwhile, they're like dictating policy to the top internet and technology firms in the world. Now, in addition to our own federal government, you know what I mean? They're training our FBI and even local and state police departments and stuff like that. So it's really on a whole other level now, and it's becoming increasingly more and more difficult to deny it or to recognize the reality of it. I mean, even like mainstream, like conservative, like Trump supporting people are being, you know, harassed and doxxed and kicked off of Twitter and stuff like that. So the latest is, you know, people that support QAnon or, you know, post about QAnon, which I frankly haven't really followed all that closely, and I don't really, you know, buy into it. But still, at the same time, you know, these people should be able to, you know, be able to speak their mind and to you know, have access to Twitter and Facebook and other social media.
Sure.
But that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, and what they've done, I've heard, is they're claiming that QAnon is a dangerous right-wing conspiracy theory, and that the people are violent that believe in it. And, you know, John, what I'm seeing too is kind of going back to the original point that Giuseppe brought up and things, is that what they're doing essentially is they're trying to set the parameters of the conversation. Now, you can talk about this, but you can't talk about that. And once you let other people set the parameter of the conversation, you're going to lose the argument.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's really been the Jewish strategy for decades now, is to basically dictate to us, to the goyim, what we're allowed to think about, what opinions we're allowed to have, what topics we're allowed to discuss, and what topics we're not allowed to discuss and to critically investigate. Namely, you know, the fake Holocaust narrative and World War II more generally. I mean, there's just certain things that you're just not allowed to question without being demonized, without having some major heat come your way. And that could be in the form of, you know, as you mentioned, getting doxxed and, you know, like fired from your job or being kicked off of Facebook or Twitter or losing access to PayPal or any number of other, you know, like electronic online payment platforms and stuff like that. So it's a real mess we're in, and we've let these people dictate to us for far too long. Nobody in any position of power influence is standing up to them and saying what needs to be said. And that includes President Donald Trump, sadly. But yeah, it's a real mess we're in, and you know, until we can finally grow up and address the obvious reality of Jewish power and influence in our world, I don't think we're ever going to get out of this mess. I mean, that to me is that's really like the number one theme of what I've been doing the past 10 years or so, is trying to communicate this to people in my own personal way and, you know, sort of stand up for the truth and stand up for what's right. And it's like, look, these people have been lying to us, deceiving us. They've been controlling our media, controlling our government, using our own institutions to advance this very anti-white agenda to systematically displace us in our own countries. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but it's very clear that these people are very hostile to traditional Western civilization generally. And, you know, in my case, I mean, I'm born and raised in America, and I care about this country. And, you know, it was a great country. I mean, even, you know, 50, 60 years ago. And it still is. I mean, there's still a lot of good aspects of America. It's just at the top, it's very, very corrupt. And, you know, everybody is basically a puppet of these people. And it's so sad. And it's gone on for far too long.
It's totally gone on for far too long. And what's so sad about it is, anyone who can basically critical think, not even a deep thinker, not even an investigator, not even an analyst, but just, you know, have some basic logical reasoning, you see right away that the Holocaust is a complete scam. In fact, I saw a week or two ago, someone did an engram search, which on Google, which is searching big data for uses of the word Holocaust. It wasn't even in the lexicon until the mid-60s. And if you dig just a little deeper, you find that the sign at the top of the gate of Auschwitz used to say 6 million died here. And now, because there's indisputable forensic evidence that shows that hardly anyone died there, it's the sign now says 1 million. And yet, if you question that, you are an anti-Semite. You are a hater. You're not a good human, a good person. And it's so infuriating. But my question now is this. Why hasn't Donald Trump, who got elected by the decent people of the so-called flyover states of America to fix these things, why hasn't he at least applied the freedom of speech and the other freedoms to these places like Google, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, which are essentially the public square? They should have no right to censor, and yet they rampantly censor. And why hasn't Trump done that?
I know, man. There's a lot of things that Trump hasn't done that he could be doing, and a lot of things that he could be saying, and issues that he could be bringing up, but he hasn't. You know, I don't know. I'm really kind of torn about Trump. I mean, I definitely think that it's good that he got elected just because he was able to kind of push the political discourse in a direction more favorable to, you know, like the issues that we care about. And you know, he's played a key role in helping the masses of people. And, you know, most average people recognize the media as being very deceptive and dishonest. You know, Trump is out there saying that, you know, denouncing the fake news and, you know, really has been very critical of the media, which is clearly hostile to him, right? I mean, at virtually every single level, maybe like Fox News, and there are some, you know, sort of mainstream conservatives that still back Trump. But overall, I mean, like the more established media, the Washington Post, the New York Times, pretty much every major, you know, print publication that's still around anymore is very, very hostile to Trump. So, I mean, I think in that regard, I think it's a positive seeing him in office and seeing him kind of influence the discourse and influence the way people understand the media and understand politics more generally. But I mean, you're right. I mean, he himself is like being censored on Twitter and on Facebook and stuff, and he still like won't do anything about it. All of his supporters are getting kicked off of YouTube and kicked off of Facebook and Twitter and stuff. And yeah, and he won't do anything about it or say anything about it, even in many cases. I mean, I'm watching. Like, I didn't watch much of it, but I did see some of the recent Republican National Convention. And I mean, these guys are up there talking about this criminal Jacob Blake, who got killed in Kenosha. They're talking about George Floyd as if it's like some big tragedy. They won't even mention Cannon Hinnant or any number of other of white people that have been brutally, savagely murdered by blacks. Meanwhile, they want to talk about these criminals who died because of their own actions, frankly. And we just cannot deal with any of this. And you know, they still fall for these cucky, ridiculous talking points that really are, I mean, who do they think they're going to appeal to with this? It just is very, very frustrating. It makes me be very cynical about the Republican Party and the president for that matter, even if I, you know, I still want to see him in office, I guess. So I don't know.
John,
I'm torn about it. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
All you have to do to ease your troubled mind and your turbulent heart is donate a couple hundred dollars to Jacob Blake, and then you'll feel good about being a caring human.
I know, right? What a disgrace. Well, and did you see that they shut down the kid, the Kyle Rittenhouse? They shut down his, you know, his fundraiser, and they're letting these criminals make, you know, I don't know what the numbers are. I mean, these guys are raising a ton of money. You know,
he's a multimillionaire now. He's over a million.
I mean, Yeah, and I mean, these guys are just total scumbag criminals. The idea that anybody would be out there defending them, let alone, you know, using these events to riot and tear down and burn down cities and loot entire businesses. I mean, it's just a total disgrace. It makes me sick. And it's been going on for months now. I mean, you know, you started out talking about the whole COVID hoax and how devastating that was. And then we move into the race riots, and it's not even race riots. It's just total lawlessness and black criminality. You know, it's we live in a totally inverted world. I mean, remember when all this first happened? When the riots broke out in Minneapolis, and like the governor of Minnesota, the mayor, I think they were like saying it was white supremacists behind the violence. Meanwhile, you turn on, you know, you go on Twitter, you see the clips of the looting and the burning. It's all black people, basically. So I mean, it's like they get on there and they tell you the exact opposite of what you're seeing with your own eyes. And you know, again, this is, you know, something that's been going on for a long time as well, but it's just astounding that this is the sort of world we live in. These are the sorts of politicians that we have running our society. It's a total disgrace.
It is a disgrace. And in that documentary, you know, Anarchy USA, they even go into this Joseph Holgani guy, this Hungarian Jew that was brought over by the Soviet Union to try to instigate the blacks into a communist style revolution. And so they've been thinking of this plan and using this plan since the 1920s. It's really amazing that people still fall for it.
Yeah, there's that quote. Geez, I'm trying to remember. It was in the I believe it was, well, it's allegedly, it was read into the U.S. Congressional Record, I believe, about how basically the Jews and the communists were going to use the blacks in America to advance their communist agenda, and they were going to instigate racial tensions and make it seem as if blacks have been their situation, their, you know, socioeconomic and political situation is a direct result of white people oppressing them forever, when that's just frankly not the case at all. I mean, we're actually we're getting ready to publish an article in the Barnes Review, which is a magazine that I contribute to. It's a history magazine that I contribute to and sort of help edit. And you know, you can read about the article, I should say, is focused on excerpts of former slaves and hearing what they had to say and how many of them actually were very well taken care of and respected and treated as essentially as a part of the broader family. So, I mean, this idea that blacks were systematically oppressed and brutally treated under slavery is just frankly not true. And I know that's a pretty controversial thing to say, but, you know, you can read it directly from slaves themselves, from former slaves themselves. So, but yeah, I mean, this weaponization of history, you know, we talked about the weaponization of language. Look at the way our historical narrative has been weaponized, to where these people think that, you know, they're poor and uneducated and have no job and, you know, have 20 kids by 10 different women. That's all the fault of white people is what they think because of this Jewish, you know, fake history.
Well, John, it's even more insidious. Again, if you have even the basic rudiments of the ability to investigate something, you will discover that, oh, the whites who owned slaves. No, we didn't own slaves. The Jew controlled the slave trade industry. They owned the ships. They negotiated with the Africans who sold fellow Africans into slavery. A majority in this country of slave owners were Jews and wealthy people. The average person who we're supposed to pay reparations for, our ancestors never owned slaves, and we were wage slaves. And you're absolutely right with the idea that if you research it, there, of course, there's abusive slave owners, but there were many who did just that, and there is oral history testifying to exactly that. But nobody wants to look at the real history. For example, there's a fellow host, a brilliant guy. He goes by the title, the Rebel Madman, Mike Gaddy, who brought up on his a show last week that, you know, everybody's so down on Stonewall Jackson, and actually Stonewall Jackson had 3,000 blacks in his 30,000 man army, and they were treated exactly as equals, and they were fighting for the, you know, they wanted the South to stay around and win the Confederacy, win the war. So everything is such a mind rape lie for the benefit of the weaponized minorities. The weaponized minorities being the internationalist Jew, the weaponized minorities being the homosexual, and the whole alphabet soup of LG, blah, blah, blah. I don't even care what it is because they're irrelevant. And to a lesser extent, the weaponized black. But, you know, many blacks have done well for themselves. Many blacks have good working class jobs. Many blacks are in the middle class. It's sad that the Zionists have kept a great majority, well, no, I'm not going to say a great majority, a significant majority impoverished, increasingly less intelligent, increasingly more violent to use as a weapon against the rest of society. So how do we fix it? How do we wake people up?
Good question, man. I don't know. I mean, I think we got to start telling the truth. I mean, at the end of the day, that's the only... only solution I think there is we have got to start telling the truth. We've got to start challenging these weaponized anti-white narratives, whether it's, you know, historical or more contemporary narratives, like with what's going on in Wisconsin and in Minnesota and
John,
in other places.
I'm sorry to cut you off. We're on the bottom of the hour break, so let's just hold on for a few minutes and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back on the Scorpio show. I'm here with Giuseppe and John Friend, and we're at the halfway point already, so things are flying by. John, I wanted you to let you finish up with your thoughts there. I'd just like to reiterate that I'm looking forward to seeing that article in the Barnes Review. The great Eustace Mullins touched upon this same theme in his book Curse of Canaan about some of the testimony of the slaves. And of course, I would only add that, you know, there were many white slaves that were in America, and the very first slaves that were brought to America were white.
Yeah, exactly. And most people don't even know that. I mean, that just shows you how totally distorted everything is. That whole narrative is just totally weaponized against white people, frankly. That's really what it is. No, but I think, the main point that I was making is, look, I mean, we have got to grow up and be able to talk about these things and deal with them as adults. And we have just not been capable of doing that for a very long time. I mean, there have been a lot of, you know, brave patriots and righteous men that have come forth and tried to tell the truth and do so in their own way. But, you know, we're at a point now where if we're going to continue to, you know, refuse to talk about this stuff and deal with it, our country is going to be destroyed, and we may already be there, frankly. So, I mean, these are controversial topics, no doubt. But, I mean, again, you know, we got into this mess because we refused to address it, and we let them basically take over and dictate to us how to think, what we can say, what we can't say, what we can research, what we can't research. You know, they've basically taken control of our society without even firing a shot. And that's just
criminal.
Incredible to me. Yeah.
It's satanically evil, actually. If you think about it, you look back to the turn of the 20th century, and to get out of high school in a state like Kansas, you had to take a test that showed you learned something. And that test was so robust that if you gave it to a Harvard master's level student today, they couldn't pass it. And as the great Charlotte Iserbeek has documented for decades, that the Sovietization of mass education, this common cause and all this other mind control dumbing down, is wildly effective. And you mentioned earlier about the black riding, but you know who was burning and looting and wreaking mayhem were young whites. And these are the young whites that have been through that curriculum, and they're so now weak-minded, weak-willed, unable to have any type of spiritual practice, unable to have any kind of acumen. All they can take in are these 30-second sound bites, you know, 30 seconds to fill their mind. And that's how they live and perceive the world. And it's so disgusting. And yet it's so effective. And I don't know how do we wake up these young people?
Yeah, it's a mess. You know what? I mean, I'm pretty convinced that it's got to come from within somebody. You know, it's, you can't sit there and try to explain everything to somebody that's not, you know, open-minded or willing to at least hear you out. And there's, sadly, there are a lot of people that just are not capable of it, it seems like, anyways. There's got to be some sort of spark. I mean, and some people may just not have it in them to really confront this stuff and to be honest about it and to come to grips with this ugly reality. And maybe that's just human nature. I don't know. But I mean, at this point, I mean, over the years I've been doing this, you know, you try to reach out to people, you try to share information with people, and then 9 times out of 10, it just alienates people, turns them off. They get offended maybe, or, you know, they don't want to hear about it. They don't want to talk about it. So I don't know. It's something that has to come from within an individual, I think.
I agree. And it's also, you know, incumbent upon us to try to find ways to reach people in language that they can understand. You know, you can't just walk up to a normie on the street and go, oh, hey, by the way, you know, the Jews are controlling your culture and what you think. You know, that's not going to work. So, I try to just plant seeds in people's minds and relate to them on a level that they can comprehend.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I try to do as well. And, you know, I mean, and I've said this on other podcasts and stuff, you know, a lot of people that I meet and deal with these days, it seems like are like right on the verge of like totally getting everything, you know, but they're just not quite there yet. And, yeah, I mean, I try my best to try to plant seeds and kind of get a feel for where they're at and just point out like basic obvious things, like the way the riots are happening and, you know, how certain murders are totally ignored by the media, like the little boy I mentioned, Cannon Hinnant, while others are totally hyped and exaggerated and even distorted by the media and used by the media to push this racial divide. I mean, that's all very, very clear at this point. And I think a lot of people are sort of seeing that. But yeah, it's not easy, that's for sure. It's definitely not easy talking about this stuff and trying to get people on board. You know, I think a lot of times too, it takes some sort of spark, like some sort of event or some sort of experience that somebody has to really kind of wake them up and to get them to kind of see what's really going on. Like in my case, my big wake up was like researching 9/11. I mean, I was already kind of, you know, more or less a critical thinker and open to hearing different ideas and different perspectives. And, you know, I was online, I was reading blogs and, you know, all the alternative media more generally, I guess. But, you know, once I really sort of sat down and started looking into 9/11, it really clicked, like, oh, wow, we're being deceived on a level I never even thought was possible. And that kind of opened up, you know, avenues to of other research like World War II and many other topics that I've talked about over the years. So I think that that's a factor as well, is it sometimes it takes some sort of event or some sort of a spark to really get people to kind of break out of their mind control, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm thinking the potential for the great spark is this insane overreach by the corrupt big pharma industrial complex and this push to have a mandatory vaccine. And I think that when hundreds of thousands of people start dying and start having unbelievably debilitating sicknesses from that vaccine, that's going to wake up a lot of people. And hopefully at that point, their mind control paradigm, the box over their head literally, will shatter. And at that point, perhaps we can have significant positive change and especially remove the malignancy that is the internationalist Jew and its effect on this country.
Yeah, boy, you'd like to think that just given the past 6 or 7 months with all this stuff that's gone on, that would be the spark for people to kind of realize what's going on. I mean, this COVID-19 situation is, I mean, so tyrannical and so out of control. And, you know, it's got a lot of people thinking, you know, definitely, at least in my experience, a lot of people that I run into are so sick of this bullshit. I mean, excuse my language, but people are over this. They're ready to go back to work, ready to, you know, get on with their lives. Like, everybody's sick of hearing about this. Nobody even knows anybody that's sick. I mean, you know, nobody knows anybody that's had it.
Yeah.
Nobody's sick. Like, everything's fine. And yet, you know, you turn on the TV and it's, oh, 1,000 more people are dead today from COVID. It's like endless hysteria and nonsense. And of course, we know about how they're manipulating the numbers and manipulating the medicine, you know, the medical evidence and stuff like that. It's just a total scam. And that's becoming increasingly more and more clear. And this idea that the only way we're going to ever recover is through a vaccine, I mean, this has got to be raising a red flag with people, I would think, right?
Oh, yeah. And like you said, nobody knows anybody that's sick. One of my cousins is an emergency room nurse in San Diego at one of the major hospitals. She said the place is a ghost town. There's no one there that has COVID. And, you know, what they're doing now, the new thing is the asymptomatic spreader. Like, you know, you have COVID, but you don't know it. It's so deadly, you don't even know you have it.
Yeah, it's a total joke. It's a total insult. And, you know, when all this first kind of happened back in like March, when they first started, you know, announcing the lockdowns and making it into this big, you know, they were, you know, instilling fear in everybody and, oh, you know, you got to lock down and you can't go to work and you got to wear a face. Actually, I don't think they were originally pushing the face mask like they are now. But anyways, they were really trying to scare everybody. And for like a week or two, I was kind of like, okay, what is going on? You know, obviously I don't trust the media. I don't trust the government, but maybe there is some sort of virus. I don't, who knows? So I was kind of trying to keep an open mind, trying to see, you know, how things would play out, seeing if anybody actually was getting sick. And it just became clear to me that no, this is just a totally hyped, you know, media manufactured event. And I started watching on YouTube. There's a guy, I haven't seen his channel for a while, but there's a guy, Jason Goodman, who has a, assuming he's even still on YouTube, I haven't watched his channel for a while, but back then, back in like March, he was walking around New York City, like going into these hospitals, and there was other people doing similar things. And it was just so clear that there was nothing at all going on. There was no sort of pandemic. Everybody, like all these EMTs that he was going up to and talking to and interviewing, they're all like sitting around like on their phones. Like nobody's even like, you know, rushing around saving people or even busy doing anything. So
language, I watched some of those same videos,
yeah,
John,
you know,
the body language of the people was totally relaxed and bored. And there was another guy that has an electric bike that was going all around New York City. He went to the Javits Center where they had this, you know, makeshift military hospital, supposedly. And all these people in army uniforms were just sitting around, bringing food inside, talking, laughing, checking their phone. I mean, just like you said with Goodman's videos, it was just a big nothing burger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So once I, you know, started seeing that, I was like, okay, this is clearly another hoax. Like, and you know, I'm not even convinced. Who even knows anymore? I mean, people get, you know, I will get sick. I'll get like some sort of flu, and I'll be, you know, I'll be in bed for a day or two, and then I'm fine. But I'm not getting a vaccine. I'm not going to the doctor. You know, like people, and that's the thing that's left out of all of this is, it's immediately it was, oh, we need to develop a vaccine. And Trump is right, you know, the main one leading the charge with this, you know, is Operation Warp Speed, where they're giving billions of dollars to all these, you know, top pharmaceutical companies to rush the production of a vaccine that probably won't even work and probably will have very serious, you know, negative side effects, as all vaccines tend to do. Nobody's talking about eating healthy and exercising and getting sun and, you know, living a good, balanced, decent life. That's all left out of the conversation, which is the most important aspect of your health in general. So it's just,
yeah, and fear and depression aren't exactly good for you either, are they?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they locked everybody down. You know, you're not supposed to go outside without a face mask. You know, meanwhile, that's the one thing that's going to help you stay healthy, right? Is getting some exercise, getting some sun, eating good food. You know, I mean, it's all very simple and basic, but, you know, the mainstream medical establishment does not talk about these sorts of things.
What's interesting, you mentioned the face masks, John, and it's amazing how initially the parasites, the mind-raping parasites, didn't realize what an entrainment gold mine they had with these masks. And they were like the the black dude who is the Surgeon General of the United States said, nah, you don't have to wear masks. I mean, they're just dust masks. They don't do anything. And in fact, if you wear them, it's detrimental to the health of the average person, especially if you have any type of lung issue or comorbidity. And really, all of a sudden it hit them, you know, this whole script, phase one, mind rape you with absolute trauma, which, you know, the COVID-SARS-2 is real. It's AIDS of the lung. I mean, there are patients who have it. I have a niece who works in the emergency room in the biggest hospital in Wisconsin, and I have a cousin in California, Northern California, and they both bitch at me, and they say, it's real. We've seen these patients. But it was a quote, accidental release of a bioweapon, right? But because it is just a mutated coronavirus, 80% of people, especially with a decent immune system, especially young people, you're immune. That's true herd natural immunity. And the rest of it, as Del Bigtree mentioned about a month ago on one of his shows, it was a pandemic. Because if you look at – he did this awesome – I highly recommend – he put it out as a separate little 20-minute video clip. He talks about the H1N1 was far worse under Obama, killed more people, and they ignored it. So there was no panic. And so what you have in reality is going on is this bioweapon that's truly messing up some people. And then the rest of it's just a flu season. But all of a sudden in early March, there's this enormous spike of hospital visits, and it was people freaked out, and Bigtree called it the panic-demic, and that's exactly what it is, another mind rape. And then when they realized, holy cow, we got this, they changed their whole tactic with the mask, and I think it's slave entrainment. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, no, I think so, definitely. I mean, it's sort of like a it's a very dark, sinister agenda for sure, and it's just degrading. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is they're just trying to degrade us and see what we'll go along with. And sadly, most people will walk around even outside by themselves in, you know, in the fresh air and still put on their damn mask. It's ridiculous. You know, it's interesting. Funny story. I went into a CVS the other day. And I didn't wear a mask. Most of the time, I can actually get away with it. I mean, if they're going to come up and ask me and, like, make a big deal about it, I'll put the thing on quick and just run in and get whatever I need and come out. But I went into CVS. I didn't wear a mask, and nobody said anything to me. And that's lately – that seems to be the case, at least here where I'm at. You know, I'll go in, and nobody even says anything anymore really about the mask. But in this case, I went in, and I just had to grab something quick, and I got in line, and there was a lady in front of me. And she had her face mask on, and the guy that was helping her, the clerk, he had his face mask on, and I was kind of overhearing their conversation, and both of them were just complaining about the mask. And the one guy was saying he's like breaking out, he has like all these like problems, like because he has to wear it all day, like working. And I mean, this is common. People are getting rashes on their faces. People can't – I mean, I literally cannot breathe with the thing on. You know, I can't wear it for longer than – and I don't even put it over my nose. If I put it over my nose, I really can't breathe. But it's just uncomfortable. It, as you said, it's based on pseudoscience. It doesn't even do anything. It's a muzzle. It's basically just a way to put us down and degrade us.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. What do you see playing out between this vicious – election cycle and then the race, the breakneck pace to get this Operation Warp Speed out? Do you think they will actually mandate vaccines? How do you see the rest of your playing out?
I don't know if they're gonna I think, well, you said mandate, that's a key word. They might mandate a vaccine, but that doesn't make it, you know, a crime not to get a vaccine. You know, I don't know. I could see it playing out a couple different ways. I think they're obviously going to be pushing it and encouraging everybody to go get the vaccine. And a lot of stupid people will. And, you know, as you mentioned, we'll probably wind up seeing all sorts of devastating injuries to people that get this vaccine and maybe injure themselves permanently, or in some cases, maybe even die. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, there are a lot of real problems with a lot of these vaccines that are given out. And so I definitely see them encouraging it. I don't know if they can – if they're going to necessarily like force it on people, although there are certain doctors and lawyers like Alan Dershowitz, for example, said that, you know, the government is going to literally tie you down and plunge a needle into your arm is what he was advocating essentially. There was a Jewish doctor.
Well, John, that's the Constitution apparently, because, you know, Alan Dershowitz is an expert on the Constitution. So apparently it's in the Constitution that they can jab a needle in your arm.
Yeah, only a Jew would say that, right? Only a Jew would totally rape the Constitution to make it as if, you know, the government could plunge a vaccine into you without your consent. But I mean, there's been other doctors, other public health, quote unquote, public health experts that have come out and said, you know, it should be mandatory. Government should make it mandatory. Universities and schools should make it mandatory. And I could see that. I could see that happening. Like, you know, you enroll in a college or whatever, and in order to attend on campus, you have to have the vaccine or something like that. I could see stuff like that happening. Maybe even certain employers could make it, you know, mandatory to work there. Hopefully there's legal challenges to all of this. That's really been the most disappointing thing with like the lockdown situation. I mean, for example, if I owned like a – if I owned my own business and, you know, the government was like, oh, you know, COVID came around, we got a lockdown, you got to close down your business, I would be like, no, like I'm hiring a lawyer and I'm suing you. This is not legal. You're not going to tell me to close down my business. But that in many cases just hasn't really happened. And there have been some people that have just like openly defied it, and look at them. They get like arrested or, you know, ticketed by the local authorities. So I don't know, man. It's not looking good. I'll tell you that. It's definitely not looking good. And it's definitely not looking good if people aren't aware of these sorts of things and taking a stand and saying, you know what, enough is enough.
Absolutely. And, you know, they already have the precedent set to require people to have vaccinations to work. They've did that some time ago for all EMT workers and hospital nurses, et cetera. They have to have their yearly flu shot in order to work.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I would never get a flu vaccine. I'm never going to get a vaccine ever again anyways. But I mean, some of these people go out and get the flu vaccine and literally the very next day they're sick and they're like bedridden because the damn vaccine poisoned them, you know?
And it's worse than
that.
It's
all for your own good, John.
And it's worse than that, John, because not only when these sheeple get this flu vaccine because, oh, it's free and it's really good for you, they it's not good for you, and it turns you into a Typhoid Mary. You essentially shed live flu vaccine for 7 to 10 days. So you actually become the spreader of the flu. And they know that. They lie about it. And Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's actually going to be the guest on my show, which is Friday evening, 6 to 8, The Perfect Triangle on Studio A, Revolution Radio. She has researched this and is in contact with a lot of true scientists, not the big pharma pseudoscientists, specious science. And she says that it's even more deadly and insidious, that there are some type of contaminants in all vaccines now that act as a trigger and activate that SARS-CoV-2 bioweapon. And that's why these young people suddenly get the AIDS of the young when they never should. They're healthy people. So absolutely do not get any vaccine ever again. It is it's like playing Russian roulette with four bullets in the gun. And that is a fact. Switching over.
Well, and real quick, I was going to say, not only that, I mean, I don't even want to go get tested for the alleged COVID-19. I'm not even going to do that, you know?
And John, if you look at the way they do these so-called tests, you're essentially being nasally raped. And it's essentially, a very light version of getting a lobotomy, because in the old days, they just stick an ice pick up your nose and tap, tap, you got a lobotomy. And instead, they're just rubbing a Q-tip around right where the thin plate where you're between your brain and your sinus cavity. So it's hard to believe people submit to it. I'm amazed every day.
It is, yeah. Well, and also it should be understood that your body's immune system is designed to help you fight off any sort of disease that you were ever going to get anyways. So there's natural ways of keeping your body healthy and of fighting off whatever disease you may have in your life. I'm totally convinced of that. I've interviewed she may be a good guest if you guys can get her on, Dr. Lorraine Day. I've had her on a couple times to talk about this, and I think she's right about that for sure, that, you know, the basics of maintaining your health and overcoming any sort of disease is the essentials: sunshine, eating right, drinking water, getting, you know, good healthy sleep, and just living a productive life, you know, and staying out of depression, staying away from drugs and alcohol and stuff like that. It's very basic and simple, but this is totally
– it's not a good business model for our controllers. That's why they don't want to push it. And we always have to remember too that this has only been going on for about 100 years with this medical system of beginning with the Flexner Report that discredited all the alternative medicines funded by the Rockefellers. So we've only been living under this insane system of big pharma for really only about 100 years.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. And yeah, I mean, now, you know, you go to the doctor and the first thing they want to do is write you a prescription. And, you know, I'm not taking any prescriptions. I'm not taking any over-the-counter drug. I mean, generally speaking anyways, I very rarely ever do, if ever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, your body is perfectly capable of healing itself and of you know, getting rid of any sort of disease that you may have.
Well, John, I can completely validate.
That's a bad business model for the chosen industry folks. So, look, we're coming on to the top of the hour. I just want to remind everyone that Revolution Radio is listener supported. So please come on to freedomslips.com and become a Patreon member and help keep this bastion of free speech going, because it's more important than ever. And there's the top of the hour music, so everyone stay tuned for the final hour of Operation Scorpio. Okay, welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. I am here with my co-host Giuseppe and Mr. John Friend. Yeah, John has been involved in this movement and this struggle for a long time, and I know he's paid a price for his efforts. And so I'd like to thank you for being on the show, John, and I think we're having a really interesting discussion. You know, I was wondering what your thoughts are on this. You know, it's becoming more and more clear to me personally that I don't think we can look to the federal government as our savior or as a way out of this mess, because they couldn't have pulled off Operation COVID without the complicity and help of the federal government. What do you see as like real solutions for change and for ourselves to try to create a better society in which to live? Where do you think we should start looking for solutions?
Oh boy, that's the million-dollar question. You know, it's tough. We're really in a tough spot, and we have been for a very long time. I mean, what I try to do is focus on myself, focus on how I can improve my life, how I can be a better person, how I can be a better communicator of this sort of information and reach out to other people. I guess I have a number of different ideas, because I really do think that if there were a person, you know, willing and able to get up and start telling the truth and maybe get involved politically and the thing is how do you fund it? Unless you're independently wealthy, I mean, it would be a very difficult thing for somebody to do without like totally jeopardizing, you know, their ability to live in this world where you have to maintain a job and, you know, earn a living so you can at least, you know, afford to put a roof over your head. But I do think that there is potential there if somebody were able to do that and get involved politically and run for office and bring up some of these topics. I know that there was recently a new party that was announced, the National Justice Party, and they're talking about a lot of these important, you know, topics and openly advocating for whites in America. And I think that that's a step in the right direction. So we'll kind of see what happens with that. I mean, I don't think that they're planning on running anybody, you know, for president or anything like that, but it might start out kind of more in local races. And I think that's a good strategy too. I mean, if you're able to, and you know, you can stick your neck out there and try to run for a local office and inject some truth into this and some sanity and bring up some of these topics and fight for what's right, then yeah, I think that that's definitely a good strategy to pursue. But and I mean, in my case, and for most people listening, I would say really just get your life together, focus on what's important, try to be a good person, try to be a good. I'm a Christian, and you know, I have a lot of faith in God, and that this will all work out, and that we are fighting the good fight. We're on the right side. We're on the good guys' team, so to speak, and we're up against an evil world. And so knowing that gives me faith and inspiration and confidence. So really, I think that's probably the best strategy is focus on yourself, focus on your own personal life, get your house in order, and be a better person. And whether that's, you know, work wise or relationship wise or being a good parent or, you know, being a productive member, wherever, you know, whatever you do for work, and trying to better your career.
And change begins with our own personal lives. And one thing I'm seeing is that, you know, there's a great separation happening right now. People are moving to, you know, pockets of liberty. And, you know, there's a big divide between rural America and urban America. And I think that kind of separation is only going to intensify as time goes on.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, even like I've been living in Southern California for the past over 10 years now. And I mean, even out here, it's a little bit different. I mean, it's very urban, obviously, but like I live pretty much on the border with Orange County, and you go to Orange County and it's still like, you know, a pretty white place. It's pretty conservative, although that's changing. The demographics are changing there as well. But, you know, they've basically rebelled against this whole COVID nonsense and refused to wear masks, and their businesses are open and stuff like that. So, yeah, you're seeing a real divide. There's no doubt about that. And I think that's another aspect of Trump's involvement in politics and ultimately, you know, being elected president back in 2016 is he's really polarized the country in a way that I mean, it was already polarized, I guess, with Barack Obama. You know, people either were total, you know, Democrat loving, you know, Obama supporters, or they hated him, right? And that's sort of the same with Trump. But it's to me, it's even on another level, because the left, the other side, are willing to use violence and terrorism to get what they want and to sabotage his administration. And not only, you know, the people on the streets, but the media, the medical establishment with this COVID scam. Even like the deep state, you know, Trump refers to the deep state a lot. And I think, you know, that is a real phenomenon. I think there are a lot of people in the government that are working against him. And I think a strong case could be made that in many regards, that's his own fault for not dealing with these people and not firing people that undermine him and hiring people that aren't even, you know, on board with his agenda to begin with. So, yeah, I mean, the country's clearly polarized more than it probably ever has been, at least in my lifetime, and that's only going to intensify. I just saw a clip the other day. Kamala Harris was being interviewed. I think it was Stephen Colbert, and she was just casually saying, "Yeah, look, you know, the riots, the protests, they're not going to stop even if we win. This is a revolution," basically, is what she was saying. So this is all this madness is going to continue. I don't see it slowing up. You know, when a lot of these cops and these high profile cases that, you know, instigate a lot of these riots and stuff, like the George Floyd situation or the one down in Atlanta, I think it was Rayshard Brooks was the guy's name, the one in Wisconsin. These officers, I mean, if there's any sort of honest people on the jury, they're going to acquit these people because they weren't out there, you know, to murder some harmless, innocent black man. The black criminals' own actions led to their death. In George Floyd's case, it was a fentanyl and methamphetamine overdose. The guy was already extremely unhealthy and had, you know, underlying health problems. He's, you know, pumped up with a fatal dose of drugs, and he gets in a, you know, an intense situation with law enforcement, and he died. Not because of the law enforcement, but because of his own actions and because of the drugs that he consumed. You know, this the one in the recent one in Kenosha. I mean, we could go on and on. This guy was a total criminal. Wasn't even supposed to be there. Clearly was not cooperating with officers, and you know, he paid the consequences. He's suffering the consequences. And I think when a jury looks at the information objectively, there's no way that these guys could none of them could be charged with murder. I mean, it's just insane. So once we start getting to a point where a lot of these people are let off, which I think is going to happen, who knows? You're going to see the country go up in flames again, I think, though.
What's so tragic, John, is the level of weak-mindedness, the level of immaturity, spiritual, emotional, is you look at the bottom line statistics of violent crime, rape, brutal assault, and murder, blacks versus whites, the aggregate number is about nearly 700,000. Whites versus blacks, the number is something like 42,000. And yet the blacks are so oppressed, so put upon, and especially by the police, and yet every year, more whites are killed by police than blacks, and it gets insane that, for example, that dude, Jacob Blake, he was really high on something. They twice tasered him, and it didn't work. He had a little hook knife, a little sling blade in his left hand. He opens the car door after being tased twice. They're trying to get him to submit and subdue him. He's reaching down into the door well for a gun, and of course they're trained to shoot this guy. The only sad thing is they should have shot him in the head, and yet you know, they probably didn't because his kids are in the back seat. And here's the great difference. If my wife and I, one of the great tragedies is that vaccines damaged her, so we're childless and we always will be. But if I had children and I had done something wrong, which I never would have to begin with, I'm a law-abiding citizen, but in front of my children, I would have just said, hey, can we walk down here? I'm not giving you any trouble. I don't want these kids to see this. But not that dude in front of the jewels in his crown. He had to, it's all about me. It's all about Jacob, right? And the distortions, the lack of any type of maturity, any type of adult reasoning and action, it's just missing. And now they're so oppressed. How can we help these oppressed people, John?
Yeah, I know, man. I mean, it's at a point where, like, literally enforcing the law is just racist to these people. They just view it as an act of, like, the white man putting them down, you know, and there's no accountability. I think the part of the problem is that nobody actually challenges them. They go along with this nonsense. They amplify it. I mean, of course, the left and the Democrats are going to do that, right? They're going to, you know, harp on white supremacy and systemic racism and, you know, injustice and all this and police brutality. But even the Republicans, they won't even say anything about this. They won't even call a criminal a criminal. You know what I mean? That's what's so sad about it. And, you know, it's just getting old. I mean, it's getting really, really old. People are fed up with this shit. And even average people, you know, nobody wants to see their city get burned down over some criminal that wasn't cooperating with the police officers. I don't know if he was on drugs or not. I mean, he may have been. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. I don't think that they've actually come out and said that. I'm actually looking at the Attorney General for Wisconsin. They've, like, released almost no information about this. It's really kind of disappointing. I mean, you'd think that they'd want to get all the facts out and kind of explain what was happening. But, I mean, it is clear that it sounds like it was his ex-girlfriend or something. She's the one that called the police on him. And I mean, the story was at the beginning that he was there to break up a fight, when it seems like he's the one that caused the fight and that he wasn't even supposed to be at her house to begin with. He apparently had, like, taken her keys and was harassing her and stuff. And then when the officers showed up, they attempted to arrest him. Of course, he resisted. As you said, they tried to tase him. That wasn't successful, and he just was not cooperating. And who knows? You're right. He may have been on drugs. I wouldn't be surprised. But then, you know, you see some of the videos, and you see, like, all the people hooting and hollering and surrounding it, and just, I mean, these people are just out of control. And this is all a result of us allowing this sort of behavior to take place and not putting a stop to it, not enforcing the rule of law, and not calling it out for what it is: violent, criminal, degenerate behavior that is unacceptable in our society. We've made it acceptable. We've made, like, this, you know, a cop shows up to arrest a criminal and 20 people surround him, filming the police, hooting and hollering and, you know, taunting the officers. This is unacceptable. And if we're going to allow stuff like this to happen, we're going to be, you know, in the mess we're in right now. And that's exactly where we're at.
Well, and the other thing that I would just add to that, I agree with what you're saying, but we should be cautious in believing any of these narratives that we're being told, whether or not George Floyd was actually killed. You know, I'm not saying he wasn't, but we don't know how much of these big events are actually scripted plays for us to watch and then to react to.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a really good point. I mean, we've seen a lot of fake events over the years. And, you know, this is another sort of controversial topic that I've, you know, focused on over the years, is the idea of media fakery and media deception and, you know, like totally staged fake events like the Sandy Hook shooting, for example. And, you know, there's a number of other ones as well that we could talk about, but – yeah, I mean, you're right. Who knows exactly what the heck did happen. But based on the information that's come out and you know, what I can tell, it does seem like this is basically what happened, that these guys are just total criminals that were not cooperating with law enforcement, and their own actions led to the situation they found themselves in.
Oh. Yeah, that's true. And again, it's kind of going back to this idea that, oh, you know, the gangsters are cool, and you know, they've inculcated this into black culture through gangster rap and other things that have been very destructive.
Well, now, and so who's behind that?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, who's behind that? I mean, the Jews have been behind the whole promotion of gangster rap from the very beginning.
Fellas, yeah. I'd like to just interject it for a second. We've got a caller about to join us. And I'm going to try and call him back. But if anybody would like to join the conversation and get to talk to the great John Friend, the phone number is 703-879-8880. Or you can, if you have Skype, look up Dolphin Dave, which is Dave's Scorpio's Skype handle. Either way, come on and join us. And I'm going to try and bring in the caller again right now. But go ahead, continue.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's just incredible what's going on, man. I don't even know what to say about it anymore. It's getting old, though, that's for sure. Seeing all these cities go up in flames and, you know, these criminals be celebrated and elevated as if they're like these great people is just – it's just too much to handle. It's insulting. I mean, pro sports, even college sports probably, is totally ruined for me. I mean, I can't even – I'm never going to watch any pro sport again, I don't think, at this point. These people are just total stooges for this communist anti-American revolution.
You know, and well, it's so true. Disgusting is to watch multimillionaire professional athletes that get paid, you know, millions of dollars to throw a ball around on a field or on a court, and we're supposed to care and hear about their moaning and bitching about systemic racism within the system. Give me a break, you know, it's disgusting.
Well, gentlemen, we're joined by a friend of the show, the great Paul from California. Paul, would you have a question for John Friend? Paul, are you there? Hello, Paul?
Hello, Paul from California.
Paul.
Please come in.
It says you're there. Huh. Okay. Well, I mean, he's on the call, I guess. In the meantime, I'd like to read this to you guys, which was – I have to find it real quick. But essentially, when this all happened, here it is. LeBron James, King James, such an oppressed individual, tweeted out of the Jacob Blake F this man, all in caps, like he's shrieking. We demand change, sick of it. And then the first replier, that was a tweet. The first replier, a gentleman named G.A.D. Saad, God Saad, looks like a Middle Easterner. He replying to King James, could you imagine how a victimized individual such as King James might have turned out if the USA weren't such a grotesque, vile, diabolical, evil, and racist country? LeBron could have been someone, and instead he wallows in abject misery because of systemic racism. And God saw it as a Lebanese individual.
Yeah, I know. I saw that tweet. I actually commented on it too. I said, sick of what? Degenerate criminal blacks engaging in degenerate criminal behavior while media and entire political establishment provides cover and justification for the rioting and looting that ensues, while the state prosecutes random Americans for murder for protecting themselves. I mean, these people are just so delusional with this nonsense. You know, they have a totally inverse understanding of what's going on. I think there's no reaching a lot of these people that are totally bought into this whole Paul, Black Mr. Lives Paul. Matter nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we lost our caller. We'll try again. Giuseppe, what's on your mind right now?
Well, what's on my mind is how can we support the noble journalistic muckraking efforts of John Friend. John, you've got the realistreport.com website. How can people, listeners, support your efforts?
It's been very difficult to support anything I do anymore. I've been banned pretty much from everywhere. I don't have PayPal. I can't use Stripe. I don't have, even like my Bitcoin, I've had to like be very kind of secretive about because I've been banned from Coinbase and a couple other places too. So, if anybody did want to support me, I'd probably tell them just to send me an email. I have a contact page on my website that has my email, and you can just send me an email and we'll kind of figure something out. But I would also encourage people to subscribe to the newspaper, American Free Press. It's AmericanFreePress.net, and it is a biweekly national print publication. America's last real newspaper, so to speak. It's a good publication. I've been writing for them for a number of years now, and we put a lot of good material. And then also the Barnes Review would be a good way to support the work as well. It's a great magazine if you're interested in history, especially revisionist history. It's absolutely a must read. Every issue that is published, it's bi-monthly, so every 2 months a new issue comes out, and it's just packed full of great, hard-hitting, politically incorrect articles dealing with a number of historical topics. The Barnes Review also has a bookstore that sells a lot of revisionist publications and revisionist books. So, yeah, there's a lot of different ways to support me that way as well, and I would encourage people to subscribe to both publications.
I am a proud subscriber.
Yeah, American Free Press really is a good publication. You know, I used to subscribe to the old Spotlight newspaper beginning in the late 1980s, early 1990s, and that was such a great publication, and it had a tremendous influence on me as a young man, reading Michael Collins Piper's work, hearing about the Bilderberg. The Spotlight was the first newspaper to ever talk about the Bilderberg back at a time when it was just a conspiracy theory.
Gentlemen, yeah. We have a caller from the chat room via Skype. Agner, welcome to Operation Scorpio. What's on your mind?
Hello. Hi, guys. No, listen, it's beautiful just listening to you guys talk. It's great hearing John Scorpio, which I know both of you. You guys are on topic. This communist breakout in the U.S., and we have elections coming. So basically my question to you guys, I'll go offline, is how do you see up until November 3, November 4 of this year, how do you see this communist revolution playing out?
Well, I don't think – I mean, I think these protests – I mean, you look at a city like Portland or Seattle and some of these other big cities. I mean, these people are not going to stop unless they are made to stop by law enforcement, and that is just not happening in a lot of these places. So I think that the protests are going to continue. Who knows? There might be another, you know, incident to sort of spark off more protests, another police shooting or killing or whatever. So I think it's going to be more of the same leading up into the election, more destabilization. See, I think really, I mean, at the end of the day, Trump is not perfect, but I think it's pretty clear that most factions of the global power elite, and certainly in the United States, they do not want him in office. I think they're scared to death of his rhetoric. I think they're scared to death of some of the potential that if he were to actually follow through on some of the things that he says, how devastating it would be to their agenda. So I think they're trying to destabilize everything and just create as much chaos as possible to ruin the election, to throw the election for Biden and Kamala Harris. I think it's going to be contested. I think there's going to be it's going to be major drama. And I mean, Biden and Harris have even and Hillary Clinton and some of these other Democrats have even basically hinted that they're not going to concede the election if they lose.
True.
So, I mean, it's going to be contested. It's going to be chaos and madness.
That's a really John, good question, Ogner. And I think we're being set up for a dispute of the result. Like you said, Hillary Clinton already stated that Joe Biden should not concede the election no matter what. And the other side of the coin is we're going to see a lot of pissed off people no matter which team wins the election.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Neither side is going to be satisfied.
Team Jew
is going to win, absolutely. the difference is, though,
two of the three guys that got shot, one killed and one had half his arm shot off, whether Scorpio thinks it's whether it's a fake or not, the details are there that two of the three guys are Jewish. This is a typical same shit that these Jews pulled off in the 60s, in the early 60s, that led up to a change in the immigration policy in the U.S. in 1965. What was the name of that movie? Killing and a black guy got lynched by some Southerners in the 60s, and they made a big movie out of it. But he was with two Jewish instigators. Something Burning is the name. It's a famous movie.
Mississippi Burning, I think.
Mississippi Burning, exactly. Yeah. And he was a black guy with two Jewish instigators, troublers, communists. And these people are out to change the Republic. And they're out to change. This has been my, since my awakening, back in the day, one of the first things that I spotted that wasn't kosher is communism. And this year there has been a huge acceleration. I hear some music going. So
we're at the bottom of the hour break. Let's pick this conversation back up in just a couple minutes. This is really good, guys. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back for the final half hour of the show. I'm talking with Ogner, John Friend, and Giuseppe, but I believe that John Friend said he needs to go, so I want to take this time to thank you for being on the show, John. This has been a fascinating conversation.
Yes,
I hope we can have you back again soon.
You know what, guys? I'm actually good. I can finish out the show. I thought I was going to have to go, but I'm good. Yeah, so we can finish up.
Good. Okay, great.
Welcome back,
John. Excellent. Okay, so here's the thing. I just wanted to let Ogner finish up his thought, but I want to add something that I'm not assuming that any of these events are frauds or hoaxes, but we need to always consider the possibility of that. And about the two Jewish people being shot in this newest thing in Kenosha, if you recall, during Kent State, the majority of the people that were supposedly killed at Kent State were in fact Jewish, and that is actually a fact. It's amazing. Okay, Ogner, go ahead and finish up your thoughts.
Well, I just had a little bit of time to look. So that movie is 1988 movie, and it was based on events that happened in 1964, and we know what happened in 1965 and where the U.S. has gone. So it was nice to talk to you guys, and I listened in for the last half an hour. See, nice talk to you. Nice to see you, John.
Hey, thanks, man. Ogner, always great to hear from you. We'll have to catch up soon. And, you know, I wanted to echo something. I mean, you see, you know, even like at the elite level, the people at the very top sort of pushing this communist subversive agenda, clearly, you know, a major faction of them are Jews.
John, you have to realize that the owners of the controllers of the central banks are communists. And when it's over. That's exactly where they want serfs. They do not want educated people. That's why the education. Now, I think I got an education in the 60s, well, 70s and 80s in Ireland. I don't think it was too bad. But now the education, even in Ireland, is starting to go down. We could get into that. I don't want to get into that now. But, you know, the owners, our owners are communists. The people, I don't say the central bankers, the people you see on TV, they're not the central bankers. They are not the people behind the scene that really, our controllers, as the famous video went, our controllers, and we're not in the club. So we need to identify these, and a lot of them will be Jews. They won't all be Jews, but most of them will be Jews. They'll be Rothschilds and whatever. They're all communists for us, but not communism for them. Even if we look at Russia, the rich, long before the oligarchs, you know, 50, 60, 70 years before that, the heads of the Russians, the communists, they all lived off fat off the hog, and the Russian people suffered. And that's what they want for America. Now, America has hundreds of trillions of dollars of unfunded liabilities, plus the trillions that you owe, that can never be paid. So there is there's at some stage in the coming future, you're going to have to deal with your central bankers. Either you owe them a couple of $100 trillion that we could never ever pay, and then you have to get into fractional reserve banking, or you're going to have to remove them. And that's basically it. As I see this election coming, I'm not a Trump fan. He's an Israeli firster. Dopey Biden is an Israeli firster. It's a one-party system. But I will strongly fight against communism for all. And, you know, I don't even have to do anything. Just look at BLM. Just look at Antifa. Look, this has been going on for months. I don't have to do much. I think I'm not so sure how American voters, but even Democrats, are they buying more guns? But are they going to vote for chaos? I've known lots of people that are left wing. Most of my girlfriends have always been, my ex-wife was all left wing and socialist, but none of them would go for anarchy.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of presenting the two sides in this election is, do you want law and order, or do you want total communist terrorism and anarchy spearheaded by BLM and Antifa? And, you know, that being said, Trump himself really is this is all happening under his watch. He hasn't really done much to put a stop to any of this. He's put out some tweets. He's not doing anything.
Why would he stop Democratic cities burning? Why would he do that? This is working great. It feeds into the narrative. You'll see it on all the election ads from the Republican Party. You know, cities burning, vote for Trump. Whatever. And then my tendency at the moment, I mean, it's so obvious that it'll be a landslide for Trump. I can't see any other. But I'm trying to look at the left at the moment. I looked at Matt Taibbi tonight. He does a two-hour YouTube video with some other lefty lunatic. And they did an hour-and-a-half show today, and they didn't mention once the riots. I couldn't believe it. See, it's like watching CNN. The left do not see Portland burning for the last 90 nights, until all of a sudden that famous Twitter photograph or the video for like Nuigi said, oh, what the fuck is going on in Portland? It's like, there's no one rioting. But he didn't know they were heading to Wisconsin in the bus. These Jewish guys, they're all heading to with their to have a bus that's converted into a kitchen. The cops catch them with all sorts of explosives and illegal fireworks and stuff like that. We've seen the videos. These are the people. So it's on Trump's watch. But I don't see what he's just letting the Jews organize this mayhem about the blacks. They've always done it. Black people are so not all black people are dumb. Cynthia McKinney knows who runs the black people, as we all do here on this probably network, and it goes on and on and on. So why would Trump send in the National Guard? Okay, protect the court. Okay, that's what he did. He said, "Oh," and the Democrats jump in on it. I think Scorpio, you said there a few minutes ago, whatever happens after, you're going to have half the electorate that are not going to accept it. So for the rest of the world, we're looking at America at the moment. You're an absolute banana republic. You owe more money than anybody. All your politicians are corrupt. Trump is an Israeli firster. I don't want to get into the litany of crimes he's committed for Israel, moving the capital to Jerusalem and stuff like that, which I haven't seen happen yet, but that's beside the point. And America, for me, is fucked. Sorry for using my bad French. And
yeah, we've got to watch the F-bombs. That's the only thing we've got to watch out.
The right thing to do is to quash these revolutions now, but it's all about politics. It's all about November elections. And any country, the normal folks, the tax-paying people, would expect the police to go in and break burning buildings with people in. I mean, this is crazy.
Paul, thanks for.
Yeah, it is. But I'm not convinced that there's going to be a landslide for Trump. I think that is very much up in the air, and. We might see the Democrat. I mean, if you look at it from the point of view of the conspirators, the smart move is to get the Democrats in there and stop any resistance whatsoever to unveiling this new system. That's the goal here, is a new system. Mm-hmm. And Trump is full of flaws, but he does represent an impediment to it to some degree. Merely by the things he says, he's emboldened many people to speak their mind that might not have otherwise. So there's plenty of room for criticism there, but I think that the Democrats might take this. I hope not, but it's not beyond the realm of possibility in my mind.
You know, and I just don't see anybody really passionate about Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. I mean, it seems like Trump has all the energy. You know, look at the contrast between just the conventions. I mean, you know, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, I definitely think that it's going to be disputed and there's going to be lawsuits and, you know, they're not going to concede and there's going to be protests. So it's definitely going to be chaotic and hectic. And see, the key factor is the left is willing to use terrorism. They're willing to use force. They're willing to get out in the streets and burn and riot and attack people. While the conservatives, the GOP, the Trump supporters are not, you know. Some of them might defend themselves, and they'll get arrested by the damn cops, you know, for defending themselves. So it's a really tough situation, and I just see – I think it's going to be a total chaos, man. I really do.
Oh, yeah. I think they're setting the stage for that as we speak. And, you know, I think the Democrats' only path to victory is through cheating. That's why they're pushing this mail-in voting thing and the great mailbox conspiracy as well. So they're just setting the stage for massive protests if they lose.
Yep, and I mean that's basically what they're openly admitting as well. So it's not like it's a secret.
I'd just like to add a comment in here. Just if somebody is historically listening to this broadcast, you know, a year from now or 10 years from now or 100 years from now, you know, we're talking about burning down cities, protests for BLM, Antifa active. But I just need to mention for a historical point of view that we are supposedly in a COVID-19, a coronavirus outbreak that has the world in lockdown for the last 4 months, that everyone had to go into lockdown except BLM terrorists Antifa terrorists, they were allowed, the only ones, whether it was in the US, whether it was in France, whether it was in the UK, that were allowed to flout the lockdown rules, that we were in lockdown. Now, some places, like in Australia, are still in lockdown, but these terrorists were not, had suffered no consequences.
Agnir, the high level of feces in their bloodstream must provide immunity.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, isn't that hoax virus fact alone?
It's a hoax virus, so there's no one going to die from it. So that's why they let them go on. There was never, if there was a serious health issue, they would never. Well, I presume. Well, they want the BLM and Antifa guy out there. But if they're all going to die the next day, it would never have happened. It's a hoax virus. We're in the middle of a flu season. They got militarized, which I'm going into in my new book, which is nearly finished. Starting from event 201, handed over to the Chinese in December, and the Chinese said, listen, we're going to show you guys, I was going to use a word I won't, sorry Scorpio, we're going to show you guys how to do it. So in December and in January, the Chinese locked down Wuhan, locked people into on TV clips that they showed us, and they showed us people falling on the street. They kept showing us in January. And then on the beginning of February, they put Italy into lockdown, and then it spread to Iran. And then in March, it was early March, they put us all into lockdown on a hoax virus. And I'm just trying to put a little bit of thing for historical purposes that we have BLM. Right. These terrorists are still going on, you know, in Portland and in you know, all over the place. In New York, crime is up 200%, 180%, you know, it's... I don't think most Americans or most normal people are willing to accept that. I mean, you know, I read from Zero Hedge Side, people are fleeing Chicago. Who would live in Chicago?
Yeah, well, and I think what you're making a good point, Agner, because what they're doing is they're allowing one side to run wild, and it's another indication that this is a scripted movie that we're watching. John, what are your thoughts?
No, I think that's true. I mean, just the fact that, you know, as Agnew was saying, you know, we're supposed to be in this deadly pandemic situation where, you know, we got to social distance, we got to wear masks, we got to stay locked down, all this other nonsense. Meanwhile, these terrorists are literally encouraged to get out in the streets and protest against racial injustice. Even, do you remember? I mean, it was maybe 1 or 2 months ago. I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was even a whole host of quote unquote public health experts that came out and released a statement saying that racism is a greater public health risk than COVID. Therefore, the riots and the protests are justified. Maybe not the riots. I don't think they said the riots, but, you know, they're saying that it was okay for them to be out there in the streets because racism was a bigger threat. I mean, it's just, you know, and it's like, gosh, if people can't see through this, if people can't recognize this for what it is, I mean, you know, it just shows you that maybe there is no hope for certain people.
Yeah, that's true. Giuseppe, we haven't heard from you in a while. What are your thoughts?
I would like to hear from both Agnew and John Friend the following observations on this statement, which is, it seems to me that the Democratic states are allowing this mayhem and violent protests, rioting, burning, looting to occur because they're trying to goad Trump into a federal response. And once he would do it, he's a dictator. He thinks he can do it all, you know, and that would be their checkmate to win the election. And I think to his credit, he wanted to do that early. And he had some advisors that told him, don't fall into that trap. And once again, in Wisconsin, he offered to send 10,000 National Guard troops to the school cowardly school marm Tony Evers, and Evers declined once again. So, what do you guys think of that scenario?
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I think that there is something to that for sure. I mean, I'm trying to remember. Any other you think about it, like historically, I mean, federal troops were used to force racial integration, right? That was back in the 60s. I think George H.W. Bush sent in troops to L.A. during the L.A. riots in 92, I think it was. So, I mean, there are examples of this happening, but yeah, now clearly if Trump were just to do it, you know, unilaterally without getting the support and the approval of some of these Democratic governors, they would obviously turn it into a big political thing, as they always do with everything anyways, and use it to try to, you know, undermine his candidacy. So yeah, you're right. I mean, I think there is that's probably, you know, the correct analysis. That's why this is going on. And maybe you're right. Maybe it is a wise idea for Trump to kind of sit back and wait for them to actually request federal aid or request federal troops, if they ever do, which it doesn't seem like they will. And then, you know, once he's reelected, then maybe he, you know, has a little bit more leeway. But I don't know. To me, it's just disappointing seeing all this happen and no one's doing anything about it. You know, Trump can get on Twitter and tweet about it, but no one's putting a stop to it, even like the local police. And see, that was what was so just disgusting from the beginning, back, you know, in like late May, early June, when the riots first kicked off. I mean, right here, right near where I live, I mean, literally, I'm talking like entire city streets totally looted, gutted, stores looted, burnt down, right, you know, right here, right near where I live. And the cops are sitting there watching it happen. They were given orders not to do anything, to stand down and to let this happen because it was too politically sensitive. They didn't want to, you know, be viewed as, you know, engaging in, you know, systemic racism and police brutality and all this other nonsense. And that's my point, is like literally enforcing the law is racist now. So it's a mess. And until we just shed our shackles from this mind control nonsense, nothing's going to change.
Well, I have a kind
yeah,
of a,
it's true. We have to lose the fear of being called a bad name. Just like it said in that documentary, you're a Nazi, you're a racist, or you're an anti-Semite, and that's the same game they're playing today.
Well, I have a different take on this. On the first line is, you have too much debt. That is the first thing. We have COVID. We have riots going on. Trump isn't doing anything. This is playing out for TV or a social media, since TV isn't that much watched now, up until the elections, to try keep it going again. All of the root problems here, racism and anti-Semitism or whatever they call it, is based in the fact that the fractional reserve banking system has screwed everything up. They've had 107 years, and they've screwed it up. And we're at the point now and everything is hiding this. The riots, the COVID nonsense, you know, whatever is going on is only hiding what is happening via the central banking system, which handed out, you know, an extra $4 trillion. I mean, it's great. And they're going to give more money. And I have stories from the U.S., from people, my buddies in the U.S., and they're handing out if you have a company, they're throwing money at you. You have communism on the streets. This is not going to finish well. November 4th might be, or is it the election on the 3rd, and you're on the 3rd or 4th? But I know by November 4th, it's over. It's over. If they vote for the communists, America is done. Now, if you vote for Trump, then Israel gets another 4 years to come up with some other bullshit and to take over more land. And, you know, there are other nuances to this story. Nothing happens in a vacuum. Lots of people have profited from COVID. Look at the British. Look at Ireland. Look at Ireland. I mean, we had all our – I'm in Switzerland. We had a majority of our dead in March and April. I got COVID in the first week in March. In Ireland, they got it just about 2 weeks later, and it's been over since. Swiss locked us down for 7 weeks, wasn't too bad, got out of it. But in Ireland, here we are 5-6 months later. If I was to go home tomorrow to Ireland, I'll give you really quickly. I want to fly from Geneva to Dublin tomorrow. Aer Lingus, the flights are put off September. It goes off. I've been looking at this all through the hoax, that the Aer Lingus flights from Geneva to Dublin are being put off. But I can fly tomorrow with Swiss Air. It's crazy. I can get on a flight from Geneva, Switzerland, and fly to my home, my home Ireland, go arrive in Dublin and go home. And if I arrived home tomorrow, there's no bars open unless they sell food, which is not very often. You serve food in a bar, and if you do serve food in an Irish bar, you have to charge €9. I mean, this is crazy. They brought in these draconian laws. You know, Ireland didn't have too much BLM, but we have a black problem in Ireland and riots, and that's that's a story for another day. And this is going. We're living in Max. I read a tweet the other day. Mad Max. Everyone remembers Mad Max. Mad Max was based in 2021.
That's right. That is very true. Interesting. We're coming down to the final few minutes of the show. Giuseppe, what would your final thoughts be on our discussion today?
I think we need to somehow continue the fight for truth, the fight for sanity, as John Friend and Agner and yourself, Scorpio, have so lucidly delineated. We're like Alice, and we've stepped through the looking glass. And we're dealing with nothing but mad hatters, traitorous mad hatters who twist and distort every basic fact to suit their own designs. And we have to redouble our efforts and also radiate a spiritual calm, because we are serving the divine and keeping in. We're on the winning team. The divine created this reality. The satanic evil can only subvert and entrance it. It doesn't have the power to create. So we have to continue the good fight.
Wow, that's a great point, Giuseppe, because this is ultimately a spiritual battle. And I know that John is on the same page with that as well. John, what would your final thoughts be? And I want to thank you for coming on the show. This has been a great conversation.
Yeah, no, thank you guys so much for inviting me on. You guys do a lot of really good podcasts, and well, I guess they're live shows, but I usually catch the podcast. So I want to thank you guys for having me on. It has been a great chat. We covered a lot of territory. And yeah, you know what? I mean, I totally echo everything Giuseppe just said. We're living in totally chaotic, crazy times. And, you know, really the most important thing is just to stay grounded in the truth and recognize the situation for what it is, and try to do your best to navigate through it and stand up for what's right and never back down, and know that we are on the side of truth. We're on the side of righteousness. We're on the side of God at the end of the day. And that's what gives me strength and keeps me going and inspires me to try to be an even better person. So, you know, we got a lot of really craziness going on in the world, but yeah.
John, could you tell us, like, how can people catch your podcast and when does it come on usually?
You know what? I subscribe to pretty much every podcast I listen to on an RSS feed, and I would encourage people to do that. You can find it right over on my website, therealistreport.com. I have a section there that has all the radio programs that I do, whether I'm a guest on another program. In this case, I'll post it there. Or if it's my own podcast, The Realist Report, you can find it there as well. So my website would probably be the best place to go. I'm also on Twitter at Realist Report. So you can follow me on Twitter, and also over on my website, I also have an email subscription, feature where you can enter your email and you'll be notified every time a new post goes up. So that's really probably the best place. I've kind of slowed down doing the podcast, although lately, the past couple weeks, I've picked back up. I've had some recent guests on. I just interviewed Dr. Kevin McDonald the other night, and last weekend I interviewed Georgia Peach, who is also out here in California. She's up in Santa Cruz. She was a former radio host, and she started talking about white genocide and the reality of what's going on, and quickly was
she's a real booted. Pistol. She's awesome.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she's great. So,
yeah. That's great. So, John, therealistreport.com. Excellent. Everyone check out John's website. Agner, what's your final thought? We only got about a minute left.
You can follow me twitter.com/Ognir2, O-G-N-I-R-2. I'd like to leave you with an image from Snippets, which is an excellent blog that I very often use, and my dear is in the chat tonight. She posted an image of a guy with a, I think it was from Snippets, with a guy, it's posted on my Twitter, a guy with a pitchfork in his arse, in his ass, and the image I want you to think is central bankers. There you go. Thanks, boys.
Yeah, there you go. And what's your blog website again, Ogner?
Ogner's, just type Og's Musings in any of your search engines, it'll find me. I try to keep up on the news. Between my Twitter account, I'm on the Info Underground. I do occasionally post an account on Grism, but not much anymore. But Twitter is my main place.
Okay, great. All right, we're at the final few seconds here. I just want to remind everyone, please support Revolution Radio. Go on to freedomslips.com and become a Patreon member and keep this bastion of free speech moving along. It really is more important than ever, especially when you think about it. Okay, guys, that's it. Until next week, everyone take care. Bye-bye.